Moi, on avait un son, c'est comme quelqu'un, machine automatique là.
C'est pas eux, hein.
Un, deux, trois.
Est-ce que vous pouvez continuer à parler?
Oui, ben, c'est ce qu'on fait pour l'instant. Ça va mieux? Tu m'entends correctement?
Oui.
En fait, on a entendu une machine derrière, une traduction automatique de machine.
Ah, d'accord. Ok. Pour le moment, quelqu'un qui prépare de l'eau, mais à part ça, il n'y a pas d'autre bruit. Non, c'était simplement qu'il y avait une personne qui parlait à l'envers. Donc, quand tu finissais une phrase, on entendait une voix un peu automatique.
En tout cas, ce n'est pas nous. Ça, c'est certain.
Non, mais maintenant...
Parce que je n'ai pas le matériel pour.
D'accord.
Donc, ils sont en train de préparer les affaires ici.
Oui. Vous commencez à 8 heures. 9 heures.
Mais il est 8 heures pour vous. Les gens s'installent pour l'instant. Les personnes s'installent.
D'accord.
Et ici, je suis à la place où Monsieur Adam va se trouver.
D'accord.
Là. Il y a un problème de...
C'est elle qui va faire la caméra?
La régie technique? C'est qui va faire le bouger la caméra? Tu peux me prendre à moi ici? Mais ce qu'il faudrait... Excusez-moi, vous pouvez vous...
Quand? Quitter les lieux?
Non, pas toi. C'est les personnes qui sont devant la caméra.
Ah, d'accord.
Je vais m'asseoir. Tu es passé pas?
On va faire un réglage de zoom.
Oui, j'entends.
It would be nice to have a little tablet or something.
Excusez-moi, mais vous pouvez juste... Merci. Là, c'est quelqu'un de besoin. C'est ici.
Et gauche. Dans l'oreille, en fait.
Mais je ne sais pas laquelle. En fait, c'est cette caméra-là.
Oui, c'est ça.
Je crois qu'on peut zoomer. Ah, superbe. Ah non. Merci. Oui. Tu peux encore approcher?
Entering phone screen, grave. Senior. Proud, watching me. Never have to.
Je sais pas. Tu sais me dire si...
J'entends des sons étrangers.
Et à nouveau, mais c'est quoi cette machine qu'on entend en double?
23-49. Nova stroke, then hard man on, then less stroke, and VS stroke,
le son.
Next, 23-49, 126. Holland Park, 24-8, Berlin, Negro.
C'est quoi cette histoire? Ouais, mais c'est un son automatique, c'est énervant, quoi.
Mais il se peut que ce soit un appareil d'adaptation de... Comment? Pour ceux qui n'ont pas, ça peut être autre chose, mais je ne sais pas ce que c'est.
Oui, mais c'est gênant, parce que c'est pas possible, comme ça. Ah, t'as laissé tomber le coup. Tu sais me dire si... Monsieur Adam, ici, doit aussi...
Ah oui, tu vas parler, il y a pas de work,
pas... Oui, donc il faut que je mette l'écran un peu sur le côté pour que tu puisses le voir correctement. Ben, c'est bon avec l'image comme ça, alors. Ici, tu le vois.
Voilà, si vous signez comme ça...
Is it possible to try with Mr. Kusha?
Yes, of course. Voilà. Je vais te laisser la place avec la personne, on va faire le test avec directement.
D'accord.
Yeah. Mais en fait, si tu veux le dire dans le fond, parce qu'il y aura que quelqu'un de différent. Ils ont installé un laptop. The laptop can't place here actually on the screen.
Good morning. Can I ask everybody to take a seat that we can start in a minute? Good morning and welcome to everybody to this workshop on barrier-free digital television, accessible digital television. My name is Paul Timmers. I'm in the European Commission heading the ICT for Inclusion unit, in which we are having activities around accessibility of information and communication technologies for people with disabilities. That includes the field of digital television, and this workshop has been organized by one of the projects that is supported by European funding, the DTV for All project. I will chair the meeting, but I really would like to start with, first of all, thanking very much the members of the European Parliament who have been so kind to offer to host this meeting, which we thought was very important to have the possibility to have the meeting here in this setting. After all, the accessibility of digital television is something that really concerns very much the citizens and many citizens in Europe, close to the heart, I'm sure, of our friends from the European Parliament. And therefore, I would like to offer, first of all, the possibility to Ms. Adriana Ticau to open this workshop and say a few words. Ms. Ticau, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Timmers. I would like to thank you all for being here. I do believe what we discussed today, it is a very, very important subject. And I hope that an important part of European research will be focused on the societal needs. And having a digital-free digital television, total free digital television, I do believe it is important for us to start to discuss the subject and to try to support the solutions which exist and to develop the new ones. Actually, this conference, this seminar, is organized with the support of STOA panel, is the scientific and technological option assessment. Is a panel formed by about 14 MEPs, and we are trying within this panel to identify the needs and to take into consideration the latest technological developments in order to be used when we take the political decision here within the Parliament. I would like also just to remind you that the Parliament pushed very much for digital television, and as you know, there is the digital dividend, and we pushed member states to speed up the process to move to the digital television. There are many countries, many member states, which already succeeded to make the transition and to fully implement the digital television all over their territory, but unfortunately there are also some member states which established a very long period to implement the digital television, 2014-2015, and it is not only this, but I think in order to ensure the added value services, the new services, especially those dedicated to disabled persons, I think first we have to have digital television, and in addition we have to have services already tested, accessible and affordable for all these persons. Unfortunately, four families in Europe has between its members at least one disabled person. So we do not discuss only about a small number of people, but even if it would be the case, I think even for a small number of people, we have to do more in order to include them into the digital society. There is also an initiative to ensure that all public websites have facilities for disabled persons. Unfortunately, not all public institutions have W3I websites. As an example, I don't know if but I'm quite sure it is not neither for the Parliament, neither for the Commission. We have a section, EP Life, but unfortunately it is not already prepared for disabled persons. So I think it is a place for better. And I remember in 2007, I tried with my colleagues from different countries and with disabled persons intergroup within the parliament with our colleagues to acquire at least 1 million signatures in order to convince the European Commission to come up with the directive, with a directive dedicated to the disabled persons. Unfortunately, anyway, the Lisbon Treaty, it was not in place at that moment in time. Now 1 million signatures, 1 million citizens can demand, can ask the Commission to promote an initiative, a legislative initiative. But I can tell you that at that moment in time, we succeeded to obtain more than 600,000 signatures. So I do believe it is possible. I do believe first that maybe it is not necessary always or all the time to have a new legislative initiative, but before it is important to support these solutions, to implement them, because we can show that it is possible and to help these persons which really needs to be included within the European society. Regarding the digital television, there are a lot of added value services as subtitling, as interpretations by signs. So I think we have to invest more, and I do believe we have to think more also to the jobs we can create through this kind of services. So I'm very... I thank you very much for coming here, for presenting us your solutions, your ideas, and I would like just to remind you that you can trust the European Parliament. We will do our best in order to develop digital television and also to make it inclusive for all European citizens, even for disabled persons. So in the European Parliament, we have the Disability Intergroup. Mr. Adam Kosa is the president of this intergroup. There is also the STOA panel, which is very much looking to the societal needs. And, of course, there are other committees, ITRE committee, LIBE committee. So you can count on us, you can trust the European Parliament, because we really care about the rights of European citizens. Good luck and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tikau. And I think that the fact that you emphasize the various dimensions of this problem, of this challenge, and put it actually in the context of that this is also an opportunity is really important and stimulating. So I would now like to give the floor to Member of European Parliament Adam Kosa, President of the Disability Intergroup, who has been so kind and was very open the moment that we started to have contacts with this DTV for All project with him as regards to discuss this topic in this setting.
Thank you. Can everybody hear the interpreter? I'm extremely delighted to see you all here participating in this workshop. It's the first time for me that the interpreter is not present with me physically in this room, but is working remotely from London. And this shows how much the technology can simplify communication and make it happen. I cannot express my feeling to see this happening today. I'm very excited about this seminar particularly. And I would like to give you now a short explanation about my role and the Disability Intergroup's aims. One of the most important issues in accessibility is accessibility for disabled customers and to improve the citizens' quality of life through accessibility. A second issue is that the European Union can see a tremendous transformation, and in the aging of the population, the future landscape is very different. So more and more elderly people will be actually forming part of a disability population, a disabled population, and we must prepare, we must be ready, building in a society that we work with them and inclusive of them. It's not focusing on disabled people. The focus is on accessibility for all. And I'm the interpreter today is working for me, but actually not just for me. That interpreter is also working for all of you. It's the two-sided of the coin. The interpreter is voicing over for me, but also saying what you're saying to me. In 1996, 14 years ago, the European Commission has published a new disability plan. And the plan promotes accessibility. We can see now over the course of the years how much new technology has been an enabling partner in pushing down barriers and breaking down barriers. In November this year, the European Commission will publish a new disability plan for the next 10 years. And I hope that there will be a greater emphasis on accessibility via technology. Digital television is indeed a very important element of this for us. The European Union Investment Treaty has signed a very strong pillar, a foundation for freedom of movement. But this is impossible to happen without the freedom of communication. If we can have freedom of communication, then European people will have freedom of movement. And I would like to add a couple more comments. My interpreter here is working from London. She is staying in her hometown, didn't need to fly to Brussels or catch the Eurostar to Brussels, and we didn't have to pay for her to travel. And we only pay for the time she's working for us now. All the cost that involves traveling to come to the meeting is quite expensive, and in the future we can look forward to seeing the costs being reduced to provide such services. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kosar, for this. For what impressed us all. And I think also, again, a good way to illustrate that accessible digital television, barrier-free digital television is something that is not only, let's say, a high-level political issue, but also something that directly concerns all of us. And indeed that we think that there can be a lot of advancement made with the help of technology, but that will not be sufficient to make the area move forward. It's an area in which there has been a long-term investment and definitely will continue to require support and cooperation in the future. And I would like to address that a little bit in a short presentation. After this, then, we will go into the presentations of as organized by the D2V for All project itself. So if you bear with me, I will just make a few points to show how, as European Commission, we are active in this area. Slides there. Okay, good. We are talking here about accessible, barrier-free digital television. And as you rightly pointed out, this is not only concerning people with disabilities, but it is about accessibility for all. And accessibility for all in practice means that there are many people that benefit from better usable technology, whether this is digital television or, as you also rightly pointed out, Mr. Tikau, it also concerns website. That's actually an area of great concern. Delivering e-accessibility cannot but be a common effort. That's one of the things that's clear. It is not a single party that can resolve it, which makes it also more complicated. On the other hand, true, once we are addressing that and are willing to invest in it, it can become a virtuous cycle. New services, new opportunities for people with disabilities, new jobs, new reasons to provide equipment that is suitable and usable for all. So also an incentive from an economic perspective as well as from an equal rights perspective. Next slide. We need to be active in this area given the fact that there is the digital switchover and that we are moving from analog into digital television. That is clear. And that also means there is a window of opportunity to address this issue at this moment in time that the switchover is going on. Thank you. We are talking about features that are enhancing digital television as is, new services, new channels, new possibilities that are offered with digital television to use information together with the audiovisual stream. And today already many people are starting to experience that. The issue here is, of course, that this should be facilities that are available for all, and all means that there are definitely adaptations needed to provide the accessibility services that are needed in a concerted effort across the value chain, users, manufacturers, broadcasters, and government. Indeed, and I will come back to that such cooperation is going on. Now, we are talking about facilities such as subtitling, audio description, text-to-speech, smart subtitles that move with the speaker, and other facilities, contrast. But also this goes to the level of having television sets that are easily set up. Even it can go to the level of having menus, manuals, and even the packaging of the technology that is made in such a way that it is easy to use for people with disabilities or for many other people that have difficulty handling the technology. Now, these facilities need to be introduced, but at the same time we also know that the television market is a fragmented market with different regulatory conditions across Europe and different market conditions across Europe, different business models and funding models that are pursued, which is complicating the picture to get these facilities that sometimes from a technical point are not so so advanced to still get that introduced all over the place. So we're looking also for achieving economies of scale. So there's this opportunity, and the opportunity is created, the window of opportunity is created by the digital switchover until 2012 to happen. But in particular, the larger opportunity, as you rightly pointed out, is the aging of the population that we see in all areas, not only the accessibility, but in many other areas we now see that there is a real drive coming from the aging of the population. In particular, from the perspective taken increasingly that older people are active participants in economy and society, and they continue to be so, valued, valuable, interested in leading an independent and active life, and therefore also interested as consumers to have facilities that make it possible for them to use and continue to use information technology. And television is the perfect platform. And we see now also, with 30% of people still not being part of the information society, that television is a major entry point to get them taking part in the information society, provided that television is, of course, easily usable, and that holds also for digital television. The context. We are working within a policy context of digital inclusion, e-inclusion, which has been, you pointed actually already to the Disability Action Plan of 1996, the action plan that will soon be updated for the coming 10 years. The wider context of disability and inclusion linked to the development of the information society, so digital inclusion. And a series of policy papers has been issued over the past years concerning elderly people, concerning e-inclusion, concerning accessibility. And at the moment, our agenda is being set very much by the digital agenda that explicitly talks about people with disabilities, about elderly people, and about accessibility. There is also a legislative framework that is helpful to some degree in this area, the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, that in its Article 3C calls for promoting the accessibility of the audiovisual media services for hearing and sight impaired persons, as well as the electronic communications directives that have put explicitly in place support, mandatory support for people with disabilities. And we are at the moment working on further measures in the field of web accessibility. Also equally important, and for us I think it's very important that we can use the variety of instruments in Europe, funding for projects, legislative instruments, promotional instruments, and policy gatherings like this, that there is that combination in place, so there also is also project support, and this particular workshop is being organized by the DTV for All project, of which you will hear more. But there are also other projects that are promoting the use of digital television, such as the T-Seniority project. So what can we do in this area? Cooperating across the whole value chain. Today we see that there is such cooperation between equipment manufacturers, content providers, broadcasters and users, but the cooperation should be deepened and should be extended and continued. Cooperation and involvement of national governments and regulatory bodies that execute the policy for the switchover that can help in creating a larger market by harmonization, and that have a specific regulation in a number of cases for providing accessibility services, such as subtitling and audio description, as well as supporting and switchover schemes. We will hear more, for example, about the scheme that has been followed in the UK, and the cooperation and the support of the European institutions, European Commission, Parliament, Council, in this matter. Way forward. One of the things we would be looking very much forward as European Commission is to extend and deepen the cooperation that I already mentioned between users and industry, the equipment manufacturers, as well as the content providers and the broadcasters, where the European Commission can play a facilitating role, as we have done so far. This is a long-running cooperation that is in place and that has to some extent also underpinned this workshop, the cooperation and industry users' cooperation on accessible digital television. One of the results there was that industry did a self-commitment to improve accessibility of digital televisions. These are the equipment manufacturers that have done that, and there are four manufacturers that have signed up to that self-commitment already a few years ago. Well, then let me finish. The next steps, we hope that the work of the DTV for All project can lead to guidance and voluntary cooperation between all the actors to rapidly introduce more accessibility services for digital television, and that we would also continue the cooperation because technology continues to develop. So it's a good thing that technology makes it possible to do, for example, remote signing and other facilities that will be coming. At the same time, we see that technology continues to advance. Televisions are becoming more advanced, and it makes it easier, and sometimes it makes it also more difficult. And if you see in the web sphere, for example, today, the take-up of social networks, they are becoming so important for people. That's an example where there is new technology, but also new risks of exclusion. It's not said that everybody can easily participate to those if you are not equipped with the skills to use the web and social networks as many of us are now starting to use it. So technology advances and there's a continued need to watch that accessibility is realized. So let me stop there. We will move to the presentations now of the various speakers, and hopefully there's also time for some discussion. We'll discuss roadmaps and the recent developments and have an overview of the barriers that are experienced. We'll see what manufacturers and broadcasters are doing in this area, and interestingly, we'll also have some time to show the technology and the services themselves, so there will be demos given. And then we will have some further debate on the various solutions, and hope to finish this workshop by about 12, 12:30. I have to remind the speakers, because I know they are all eager to speak and to present, that you've got 10 minutes, and I'm a ruthless chair. So after 10 minutes, I will certainly try to stop you, even if you have a lot more to tell. So think about it. If you have many slides, which are the few ones that you want to show and to concentrate on, and so that we don't have an overload of information. So the first speaker here will be Mr. Itagaki of the DTV for All project and the university, the Brunel University in the UK, talking about roadmap issues. Mr. Itagaki, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you very much for the MEPs for hosting this event and also organizing the event by the Stork Department. Thank you very much for your help. And also thank you to the European Parliament staff. Now, this workshop is actually real-time webcasting, so that some of the people who can't attend now will be able to see over the web. Next slide, please. Okay, firstly, I'd like to describe about what is DDB for All project and about what we are doing and about a bit of a demo we are presenting and so on. Firstly, DDB for All project is a co-funded by European Commission under the CIP ICT policy support program to facilitate the provision of the access service on digital TV across the European Union. I'm the coordinator from Brunel University in England, so that is totally neutral from the economically and also the politically and also broadcasting world. And the Red Bee Media, that is the content producer in UK, and Danish Radio, that is national broadcaster in Denmark. Peter Rooms from Danish Radio would talk about his perspective from Denmark. And IRT, this is a research institution for the German public broadcasters. And RBB, Ms. Bettina Heidkamp would talk from her perspective in the German regional broadcaster. And TVC of Spain, and Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona, who is a trial coordinator, and also Italian national TV station, Rai, is involving. Next slide, please. So firstly, what is the main aims? Firstly, we are evaluating what is the existing service. In several countries over the 1 year around the Europe, that is work package 2, and some of the results will be presented from the Pablo Romero of the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona. And how that the digital video broadcasting should be look like, that is coming from the RBB, Ms. Bettina Heidkamp. And also we are demonstrating currently available BBC contents over there. So, audio description and DVB subtitling. In together, Brunel University prepared another demonstration for near future market for those TV enabled with internet. So that is, video signer could be provided through internet. So, ordinary person watching TV and could be switched into internet with video signer on. Next slide, please. So, second part of the main aim, identify improvement in existing access service and way of the addressing the key technical, organizational, and legal obstacles to sustainable take-up of these services in the time frame of the 2008-2010 throughout Europe. So basically, what is the obstacle? That's the main part of my speech, and also the another speech from Mr. Peter Rooms of the Danish Radio, how Denmark cope with those transition and introduction. Next slide, please. So current situation. So according to the European directive, 2012, that's the time limit, all the member states supposed to switch on to digital. Some of them already done, but with or without accessibility provisions. So that's the question number one, why it hasn't happened. On the other hand, manufacturer's side, they have done quite nice thing. Pan-European platform, so high-end product, actually one platform all over the European market with slight modification or localization in the middleware. That's the software to present the recorded data onto the screen and the speakers. So technically speaking, yeah, one standard being used, but slightly improved. On the other hand, the private subscription operators like Sky in UK, they are implemented quite aggressively from my point of view, because they are much better positioned than the public broadcaster, because they have full control of the throughout the delivery chain, from the production to the set-top box, i.e. that decoder at the home. So that's the reason most of the time subscription including that TV decoder side. So that's the reason they can change the decoder, they can specify the decoder. However, public broadcaster may not have a control at the same position as those privateers. So that's the reason they sometimes the set-top box may not be prepared for certain additional functions. So that's a question we need to ask about it. Next slide, please. Unfortunately, this is a bit small picture, but try to show how that the infrastructure and also the resources being handled around the TV delivery chain. On the top, ITU, International Telecommunication Union, that allocates frequency resources, frequency spectrums, to each country or by region. Then each member country specify or sell those radio frequency resources to each channel or each broadcaster. Then the broadcaster uses those resources to transmit content. But public broadcaster, those funding coming from each member country, where is that money coming from? That is coming originally from viewers by means of the TV license or taxes. So basically money would be controlled by regulatory body one way or another. So the point is, those gray shaded area, you can see all the stakeholders supposed to be in one group, but not necessarily connected. Certain countries like UK, DTG, Digital TV Group, have a joint forum supported by the regulatory body Ofcom. So that is, they can talk to each other, and also Ofcom can look over what's going on. So that is, the quota system would be prioritized and also enforced. That is a system, from my point of view, this is a good practice. It may be a forum, or it could be different shape like in Denmark. In any way, we should have a forum, including both user and producer and so on. All party has to be in the forum. Next slide, please. So, DVB subtitles and audio access services could be delivered. That's the standard we're using, DVB and MPEG audio. To enable those functions, yeah, some changes on the software may be needed, but high-end product has already in place, but there may not be a audio description button on your remote, but if you press several times, you may be able to see it. But again, this is a country-by-country software difference makes this functionality difference. Some EU member countries managed to implement access service with help of the technical forum or other kind of forum supported by regulator, broadcaster, and manufacturer, and user representatives like DTG and Nordic countries in Nordic, that is the broadcasting organizations meeting, and also in Japan, Alive, that is the technical forum exists. They are issuing implementation guidelines. This is not compulsory law, but guideline. But everybody has to adhere to it. Next slide, please. So, short term, what we needed. This kind of technical forum with regulator support should be in place. Then everybody talk about it. So, broadcaster can set up the parameter for transmission, and manufacturer can match up with those parameters. Then those service could be done. Another is user forum. User's voice supposed to be channeled through nice way. In some countries, user groups or pressure groups targeting each broadcaster, that's making a obstacle. So we should have somebody to gather those requests, demand, and also financial support from the regulatory body to how to implement it. So that is a quota and qualitative control supposed to be there. Next slide, please. And long-term and term roadmap has to be, we have to see those changeover in 5-year, 10-year term span. Any additional functionality, probably we need about 5-year roadmap to introduce gently, otherwise it will collapse. In case of next generation deployment, like in UK, analog switchover, they have 10-year, 20-year map. We should have such long-term map for the next generation digital TV introduction. Okay, next slide, please. So those forums should be in place, then it would be feasible to have those services in place. Our recommendation would be on our website, and also those slides for today's presentation will be updated within a few days' time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Itagaki. What we will do is we will have the three presentations in this block, and then take a bit of time for questions and answers. So think ahead, see what kind of questions you would like to pose to this presentation. But we will first take the next presentation, and that will be by Mr. Peter Looms of Denmark Radio on the recent developments of access services.
Good morning. I've got 10 minutes, so I'll keep it fairly snappy. I want to look at two main issues. First of all, what is the nature of our challenge when it comes to making television more inclusive? And secondly, what can we already do? What's available? What does it take to get started? What does it cost to offer access services on a regular basis? So I'll just stick to those two main headlines. If we go to the next slide, we're talking about 500 million people in Europe, if we're just talking about the European Union. If we take our neighbours towards the east, that's another 280 million if we take the CIS countries. So it's a fairly big market. And as Taki mentioned, surprisingly, much of the work to do all this has already been done. The manufacturers have, in fact, done many of the things we actually need in set-top boxes and digital television receivers. Next slide is, we've got it up there. So the idea is to go for e-inclusiveness, making sure that the users get the full benefit from not only television, but all kinds of information and communication technology. TV is a good place to start because it's something that most of us use for 2 to 3 hours a day, in particularly some of the groups who are most affected by this, that's to say the elderly. And the next slide, what we want to avoid is exclusion. We don't necessarily want to do this, but it happens. So inadvertently, without thinking, we do things which actually exclude people from getting the full benefit. Remember during the World Cup, For the first day, we excluded nearly everybody because people couldn't understand the commentary of the football matches. But it didn't take very many hours before that solution had been dealt with, and we could, in fact, hear the commentary, even though there were thousands of fans playing their trumpets in different venues in South Africa. Next slide. What we normally hear is that there's a problem. But how big is the problem? And I don't think it's all that important to discuss whether it's 12% or 15%. What is important to note that there is a challenge. There's a significant minority of the population for whom watching television is difficult or in some cases impossible. If we need to, we can actually go to sites like the University of Cambridge where you can calculate the proportion of a population who will be excluded. And within Europe, we're more or less the same, so that calculator is very useful to get a ballpark figure of the size of the problem. Next slide. But what kinds of needs are there? There are people who are born deaf, those who have become deaf, they've lost hearing at various points. And so if those who are born deaf will need signing, whereas those who have become deaf probably need subtitles because they may be able to read. We've got people who are hard of hearing. We've got people who are blind. We've got people with different kinds of visual impairments. We know about this. You know about it probably more than I do. But if we go to the next slide, there are some other categories we tend to forget about. So the next slide. We've got programs in foreign languages. Okay, maybe not in some countries like Germany, but certainly in the north of Europe. Many of the programs, 40% of the programs, are in languages other than our mother tongue. And therefore, we need to be able to follow what happens in these languages. And that would normally require us to read subtitles, or to use something like spoken subtitles. And then, of course, there's my nephew's daughter on the right. She's about five in that picture. We can't expect her to read subtitles. But why should they be excluded from watching television? We have to find solutions for them too. The next slide just shows that in a world of, in the grey century, or if we're looking at another scenario, the open borders scenario, we've got to look at a continent where people move around. So there will be immigrants, there will be refugees as well, and there will also be the elderly who find it difficult to follow fast colloquial language. So we have a range of needs. About 15% of the population may have some difficulties watching television. Next slide. So why now, if you press it once more time? We do, in fact, have a window of opportunity, and the first one is this switch over to digital television, which officially should be complete by 2012, but probably won't be finished until 2014 or 15. And we have both the legal requirements from the Audiovisual Services Directive, we've got the UN Convention too. We've got a number of legal requirements which require us to take a serious look at making what we're doing as accessible as possible to as many as possible. So this is an opportunity we should embrace and actually use, but there will be some other opportunities in the future too. Next slide. So if we want to, we can address those with hearing difficulties with visual signing, and there I've got an example from Denmark. The sign is standing to the right of a screen showing the television program. It's a virtual channel. And that works quite well because the sign is big enough so that we can actually see what she's communicating. Last night on Belgian TV, I saw signing, which is, again, big enough so you could actually see it. We've had this, and it's available in most European countries. But we also have subtitling, that's to say subtitling in the mother tongue for those who find it difficult or impossible to hear what's being said. The next slide shows just visual impairments. What can we do? Well, we have audio description, which is just an attempt to explain what's going on in between the dialogue in something like drama. So the example here, blue sky and sun shining on a field of yellow flowers, setting the scene so that those who are visually impaired can actually get a sense of what's going on. They can derive benefit from the television program. But we should perhaps just mention here spoken subtitles. If the program has got a foreign language, if we've got the Iranian president talking on the news, hardly anybody in Europe understands Farsi. And if you have subtitles, okay, there are people who won't be able to read the subtitles. So we can easily and inexpensively produce a service which actually translates and generates an additional soundtrack for these foreign language segments. Just to give you an idea, it will cost about 10 to 15,000 euros a year per channel in operating costs. So it's not a huge amount of money to do this. Next slide. And for those who are viewers of programs in foreign languages, subtitles. Now we've gone digital. We don't have to burn the subtitles into the video itself. We've got enough space to have optional subtitles up to 9 languages. Our colleagues in several countries, including Finland and Catalonia and Switzerland, have multilingual subtitles. In Finland, they may be operating in certain programs with 5 different languages which have subtitles in prime time. And certainly in Spain, you have normally the requirements for 2 languages, so a national language like Spanish, but also a regional language, Catalan, Basque, and so on. So what are the challenges? We can say we've got some needs and we've got some mature solutions, things that work. What do we need to fix so we can do a good job? The first challenge is to do with live subtitles. And you can just click through the next 4 slides so you can see if you haven't seen live subtitles before. So just click through the next and the next and the next and the next. And you can see the subtitles build up a few words at a time, and you would think that would be great. Also for live programs, we've got subtitles. 2 problems. One, there's a delay. There's a delay of at least 5, sometimes 7 seconds. The second thing is that the subtitles build up a few words at a time. It turns out when we do user studies that people can't actually follow. 2/3 of those for whom these subtitles are intended can't follow in a meaningful way those subtitles because of the delay and because of the way in which they're presented. So we have to find a solution to this problem, to remove the delay and also perhaps to look at different ways of presenting things as we normally do. I won't trouble you with the details, but solutions are possible. The next challenge is to do with the fact that we don't have a, well, there are more and more live programs, and therefore this problem is going to get bigger and bigger, and therefore we need to find solutions which work. At the moment, solutions for doing live subtitles only exist for some European languages. So we have to be able to find solutions for all European languages in order to do this. So the next challenge is to do with visual impairments. We can do audio description, as I mentioned, but we can also do spoken subtitles. And these are, in fact, quite cost-effective. So for countries where you already have a lot of foreign language programming, we can put together a service for quite inexpensively if the subtitles are already there. So we can just use speech synthesis, which actually sounds quite good, thanks to the navigation systems in cars, and offer a service for those who actually need it. So today we can do something which is produced by the broadcast. Tomorrow, hopefully, there'll be speech synthesis in the device. The third challenge is to do with the fact that the regulators are just setting challenges, or setting targets for supply side. 100% subtitles, 20% audio description, 5% signing. If you just click through those things here, it's not enough because to look at the supply side, we've got to look at people at the other end. Are they aware of the existence of the service? Can they find it? Can they use it? And do they benefit from it? So my argument is that we should perhaps start using some metrics which are to do with the users and not just the services. If we'd actually looked at whether people were benefiting from audio description when it was introduced 7 years ago, we would have realized there was a problem and we could have fixed it perhaps a few years ago rather than first now realizing there is a problem when we're broadcasting thousands and thousands of hours. And then we have, the fourth challenge is actually getting to work together. We heard before from Taki, we all see different aspects. It's a bit like these blind gentlemen looking at an elephant. Depending on which bit of the elephant we're touching, we have a different sense of what an elephant is. By working together, we can actually get a sense of the big picture. And the next slide means that we need to actually do things like this, think about solutions out of the box. In New Zealand, the advertisers are actually showing adverts with subtitles because it makes commercial sense. In the UK, visual signing for video clips sponsored by a local paint manufacturer. So there are some solutions we haven't looked at, not just paid for out of the public purse. Next slide. I'm nearly finished. So the argument is we should work together rather than trying to push particular things through, to explore where there's consensus, and then when consensus is in place, come up with some clear targets and then make sure that these are enforced. That's it, essentially.
Thank you very much for an excellent presentation. Makes me think, by the way, to remind that this session is being web-streamed live, and perhaps in a few years from now, when we have again a session like this, we will have live subtitling, also for this audiovisual stream that is happening right now. And that would be a great way to have further outreach. So the final presentation in this block will be from Mark McGuinness of the European Disability Forum.
Okay, can you hear me? Good. Thank you for inviting me here today to talk about this. First of all, the next slide, please. I'll just talk about the European Disability Forum. The EDF is basically it's an umbrella organisation of European disability organisations, which covers in total 65 million people with disabilities across Europe. It works to guarantee rights and active participation of people with disabilities in society. And the main areas of work include accessibility, and that includes ICT accessibility, which includes digital television. So why are we interested in television? Well, basically, for people with disability, it's an issue of social inclusion. That's what it boils down to. And I have a quote here which sums it up, really. It's from the European Parliament in 2001. And they said, access to television is a fundamental right. Television is vital in defining the cultural landscape of modern societies and provides a primary source of information, education, and entertainment. The audiovisual sector is of fundamental importance for democracy, freedom of expression, and cultural pluralism. So it's about a lot more than just information and entertainment. Things like democracy, inclusion, participation, particularly as things are developing now with television and the internet colliding, and with interactive television, people are beginning to be able to participate more through their television, and you're getting services, including public services, health services, coming through the television. So television is vital for these reasons. Now, there are a number of policy drivers at an international and European level. Firstly, the UN Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is very important. It has a couple of articles which deal with access to the technologies needed to watch television, which includes the set-top boxes, the receivers, and also the program content. So that's about participation as well. And in Europe, the Audiovisual Media Services Directive, which we heard about, and the telecoms package both have articles relating to television equipment and content. So these two areas really are how you could divide the access issues for television, the first one being content, the second one being equipment. In terms of content, we've already heard about access services, particularly subtitles, sign language, and audio description. And they're absolutely essential. For a deaf or hard of hearing person, for a blind or vision impaired person, these services are essential for the understanding and enjoyment of television. But it's not just that they're there. The quality is very important as well, and quality is often a problem. We found this in my country, in Ireland,
Can you just hang on a minute? I think they are trying to re-establish this.
We don't
connection
have a sign
for sign language yet.
Okay, sorry.
Okay,
we are back again. Or?
Yes, I think you wrap up 1 minute. You go back 1 minute. Yeah.
1 minute. Did we get to the UN Convention, the policy? Okay. Well, I'll start with the content then. Okay. For people who are deaf, hard of hearing, blind, partially sighted, access services of subtitling, sign language and audio description are vital for the full understanding and enjoyment of television content. But it's not just that the access services must be produced. They must be produced with the right quality, and they must be received with the right quality. And this is often where things fall down. We have a situation, certainly in my country, Ireland. I've heard a lot about this from the United States and in some other European countries as well, where sometimes the production quality is not good. They describe the wrong things. Maybe subtitles might miss out the fact that there's a gunshot in the background. And you can imagine in a drama, the gunshot in the background is very, very important information. Or they miss out who's talking, and you don't know who's talking. So the other side of it is the delivery, what the viewer actually receives into their home. And this can sometimes break down where the subtitles may be half off the screen and half on the screen. They may disappear in the middle of the program, or they may suddenly disappear for a whole day on one channel. These kind of things happen. So we need quality standards for access services. They need to be developed and monitored. It's very important. And in terms of the monitoring, this is something though that Peter just referred to, that the compliance really should be measured at the point of delivery, which is in the person's home. So to make sure that the person is being able to benefit from the access services that the broadcaster is spending money on producing. Now, I think there's a regulatory gap within Europe where the network operators are not regulated. And I'll give you an example, again, from Ireland, where I come from, that 80% of householders receive their television through satellite or cable. And the satellite and cable often have problems with the access services. But those network operators are not under the access rules in terms of the quotas, and they're not even regulated by the television regulator in Ireland. So a couple of points worth making, which is a kind of framework within which to think about all these access services and other and equipment, is that people with disabilities want to live independently. That means they need accessible equipment that they can operate independently, so that they can have access to the basic receiver functions, watching television programs, knowing what they're watching, knowing what's on now, what's on next, being able to plan their viewing, being able to use things like the recording and playback and the parental controls. They need to be able to do this themselves without having to ask somebody else to do it for them. So you need things like clear menus, adjustable text in terms of size and colours for people with vision impairment, text-to-speech for people who can't read text at all, easy-to-use remote controls, that kind of thing. Another thing worth mentioning is television viewing is a social activity. Most people watch television with family or friends. So in a group of people watching television, people will have different needs. And with regard to access services, somebody may want the audio description, somebody else may not. So you need to be able to have independent access, and you need to be able to switch access on and off very easily. If somebody wants to watch subtitles and then an hour later somebody else wants to watch a program without subtitles, they need to be able to switch this on and off very easily. We've heard about the digital switchover. I'm sure we're all aware that this is coming very, very quickly. The thing about the digital switchover is that quite soon there'll be no more analog television in European countries, and viewers have no choice but to switch to digital. So in order to help people make this choice, people will need information, and some of them will need it in accessible formats. Set-up assistance may be needed for some people. A lot of people, if you give them a box and a load of wires, they won't know what to do with it. They won't know how to connect it to their television. They may need to get a new aerial or have an aerial installed. They can't do that themselves. These things may cost money. If people need a box with extra accessible functions, then it will cost more than a standard box. If they need a new aerial or a new television, it'll cost more. So financial assistance may be required as well. And we've already heard mention of the UK Digital Switchover Help Scheme, which is a fantastic example of this kind of thing. They've, at halfway point in the switchover, they've had 350,000 assisted installations of equipment and 150,000 helpline calls which they've served. They reckoned on dealing with over 1 million by the end of the switchover process. And the cost has been much lower than expected there, because a lot of people have actually switched before the analog switch off. And this is to be expected in most countries. People will switch to digital of their own volition. So really, when we're talking about help schemes and assistance schemes, we're talking about a mop-up operation where you're making sure that the last people cannot be prevented from switching, the late adopters. Now, I'm being told to hurry up, so I'll miss out that quote, and I'll go straight on to the next slide, please. Just to say, where are we now? There's currently quite a low level of products and services that are inclusive. In terms of access services, for example, the latest measuring accessibility in Europe project results show that of the national language programs from the main public broadcasters across, I think it's 12 member states, only 49% are subtitled. There's actually a lot more subtitling by private broadcasters than there is by the public broadcasters, which is very interesting. I've already said that the quality issues means that not all this is being received by viewers, and there's little or no audio description and sign language. In terms of the equipment, how many digital receivers are there that are accessible? Well, in terms of very accessible, having text-to-speech, control over menus, text size, contrast, etc., we basically went out and bought one of every fully accessible receiver that's available worldwide, and we put them in a big room and we photographed it, and the next slide will show you our photograph. Well, there's one. Now, this isn't to say that there aren't any receivers with access functionality in them. In fact, an awful lot of receivers now are able to produce audio description, which is fantastic. And a lot of them, particularly on remote control design, that is, that's really good now, generally. But in terms of having all the functionality in one box, and this one doesn't even have it all, it doesn't have clear audio, for instance, but there's only one that has really a lot, and it only works in the UK because it's a free view. So my last slide is basically has been already said by the previous two speakers. Everybody has a role to play. We all need to work together. So we seem to have a great cooperative spirit here today, so I'm glad to hear that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGuinness. And what we will do now is offer the opportunity for a few minutes of questions on the three presentations. So who can I give the floor for raising a point, a question on what has been presented here? While you are thinking, let me start off with a question on this. I think that an important point was made by Peter Looms about the steps that have to be taken from awareness to actual use. But I was a bit not quite clear to me when you were talking about awareness amongst whom and what type of awareness is needed. Is that about the solutions that are there today, or are we talking about awareness of what is going to come as next generation television?
Clearly, the people for whom the services are intended should be aware that they exist. The problem is, in many cases, they don't. So we know that from studies from Ofcom and others. But it's when you look at how these people learn about new things, it's not just enough to have websites. It's also a question of looking at where do they get their information from. It's from family and friends. But if you suddenly get a hearing impairment because you've been ill or you've had an accident, there will be a number of professional contacts who should know about this. So, for example, if you have serious hearing impairment, you go to an audiologist. Turns out in Denmark, we're doing a study of this right now, most audiologists know of the existence of Teletext subtitles, but none of them knew that we'd switch to DVB subtitles. So it's clear that we need a concerted effort to make sure that the professionals who come in contact with those who suddenly have different circumstances, they lose their hearing, can actually be given relevant advice. The same goes for the elderly. In Denmark, all 75-year-olds receive a visit from somebody who comes and it helps them explain how they can continue to live in their homes. These people didn't really know enough about this, so we've now put in place a mechanism so that all of these people in the 97 municipalities know of the existence of access services so they can actually explain this. And in fact, it's a good thing for the municipal governments, because the more people who choose to stay in their own homes because they prefer to do so, the cheaper it's in fact going to be for them. So there's an economic argument here.
I think that's quite an interesting point that you make, also in view of the last slide of Mr. McGuinness about cooperation and who needs to cooperate, because I'm not quite sure whether, let's say, in the delivery of awareness, the groups that you are pointing to, the ones that are actually helping to sustain independence, for example, when people are aging, whether they are really part of this debate and are actually aware. And, of course, they should be normally, as you say, as you suggest, that they are in contact with many, many people that might be, so to say, potential users of access services. Are there other questions, points to make? Shall we move to the next set of speakers? So we'll have a second block of speakers, and after that we will have the demo, and we will get a bit of explanation of how that demo will run. It may also be an opportunity to walk around a little bit. So we will have two speakers that are going to present here the point of view of manufacturers of television equipment set-top boxes and the broadcaster's perspective, in that case from the European Broadcasting Union. So the first speaker is associated to Digital Europe, the Association of ICT Industry in Europe, and speaker is Frank Kamperman from Philips, I think.
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you very much. So, a manufacturer's view on digital television accessibility. Let me go very fast to the first few slides, because I think we more or less covered that. As we know, digital television is being introduced right now in Europe, which should be finalized in 2K12. And it gives a number of opportunities, but also a number of challenges, because it's not directly, let's say, the holy grail of all possibilities. Anyhow, what is required for that? I'm now on slide 3, is that we, of course, have a good cooperation in this respect. And in relation to TV, we need to look at a number of things. One of them is, let's say, information provided by the TV itself. And the other one is information provided via the broadcast. And both items need to be addressed, also said already by other speakers. If I now switch to slide number 4, here I think these are the stakeholders in this discussion, and it's anyhow required for them to work together to come to a solution for accessible digital television. I want to highlight one of these cooperations, and that is the one between Digital Europe, and I'm now on slide 5, between Digital Europe and the user groups represented, for example, by EDF, RNIB, ONCE, and also facilitated by the European Commission, to openly discuss what would be needed and what can be provided in televisions to provide for better accessibility. So this cooperation started a few years ago and resulted in the end of 2008 in a so-called self-commitment, where a number of manufacturers, committed to provide certain accessibility features in TVs. That industry self-commitment has been signed by Microsoft, Panasonic, Philips, Samsung, and is also supported by Sony. And this, from the beginning of 2009, is already resulting in products into the market which are compliant with that self-commitment. And it's products in the sense they are millions of products. If you know that approximately 50 million TVs are being sold in the European Union every year, and that major manufacturers contribute to, let's say, their entire range, it's a lot of TVs, I have to say. So, starting from 2009, TVs, according to the self-commitment, entering the market, and we reported to, among others, the EDF on results up to now in the first half part of this year. To just give an example, and I'm now on slide 6, for example, in the television which is over there, an access menu has been included, which gives easy access to settings for visually impaired and for hearing impaired. Also, items like key beeps to get feedback whether the remote control command was being received have been added. This is one of the examples of actual implementation features which have been put into TVs given the self commitment. To dive a little bit more into the self commitment, it covers, let's say, the digital television accessibility basics. So it says something on user documentation, what to do, what not to do. It gives statements on the user interface, on the remote control, for example, on certain buttons which should be there. It states items on receiver functions, for example, a receiver should be able to automatically install channels, at least to do as much as possible automatic. And it also states requirements on specific service elements, so requirements for receivers to be able to receive items like audio description and subtitles. And so in the UK we see that there is audio description already, but for example in this case Philips, we currently have audio description functionality in all our TVs throughout Europe. The only point is that in the countries where it's not transmitted, it's not enabled in the television. But it's, in principle, it's there. One of the important points also of the self-commitment was that, as said, it covers basic digital television accessibility, but it was also agreed in the self-commitment to look at more advanced features. And the feature on the highest on the priority list by the user groups is text-to-speech. And also in the past we have been discussing text-to-speech functionality for digital televisions with the user groups. So what you should imagine with text-to-speech, I'm now on slide 8, is that, for example, menus on a TV or text appearing on a TV is spoken out loud. That could be done by the TV, but we are looking at a solution where the text-to-speech converter is external in this case, and where the TV can interface with such an external device. And such a device can be anything. Yeah? It can be a device which is very closely coupled to a TV, but it would also be possible to send items to a mobile phone or even to or to a laptop or whatever. And also what would be possible, but that's outside my field, but it's just to give possibilities here, is that you use similar technology, let's say from microwave ovens or washing machines, also to address a text-to-speech device. But let's not dive into this. We are into digital television. So what is the actual status currently on the work with text-to-speech? We are working together with EDF and their members on two specifications. One is a text-to-speech functional specification, which describes the desired behavior of a television with a text-to-speech combination. And the other one is a specification describing the interface between a digital television and a external text-to-speech device. On the contents of these specification, and specifically on the functional one, we currently have a high-level agreement with the interest groups, and we are now detailing them further in the coming months. And the intention is to have these documents ready for submission to, let's say, a formal standardization body around the end of the year, which means that we, let's say, provide for a generic technology which can be openly accessed and also used by different manufacturers, which is important because we need standardization in this field for economy of scale reasons. There are, however, still a number of barriers in the area of DTV accessibility. One of them is, let's say, a lack of market or a lack of market demand. See is that adding this type of functionality to TVs cannot, let's say, you cannot leverage that in the market by, for example, asking a little bit higher price. So you have the cost for the features, but there is not really an opportunity to generate a little bit extra income here. And I think what we should try to do together is to get market demand for this type of devices, and therefore triggering also the further development of them. What I already said is that economy of scale is very important to drive down development cost. And for this reason, market fragmentation must be avoided. Specifically for digital TV, you would say, okay, we have DVB in Europe, so why market fragmentation? But the tricky thing with digital TV is that it is very easy to add all kind of proprietary type of items on a country basis or even on an operator broadcaster basis, which gives fragmentation in products, and you need to, let's say, to adapt products for specific regions or operators in one single market, which is rather unfortunate. And I think that for accessibility functionality, we need to avoid that. We need to avoid fragmentation as much as possible. And we hope that, let's say, discussions and results we obtain by cooperating within Digital Europe together with for example, EDF, can help with it. Now, the last point, and I think that has already been mentioned by a number of speakers, is that If you want to have accessibility services, you have to apply them throughout the value chain. An example is audio description. You can have it in the receivers. You can have support for it in the receivers. But of course, it needs to be that type of content needs to be generated together with the main content and also needs to be broadcasted. In a number of countries, mainly the UK, this is the case, but in the rest of Europe, it's far less, to put it like this. So also here we need to find ways to get that further into place. So to conclude, at least from our point of view, from the Manufacturers Digital Europe, we think we have a good cooperation with the user groups, and we are very happy with that, to be able to discuss it on a European level. In the first phase of the cooperation, we had already results by the self-commitment. And currently we have good progress on specifying text-to-speech type of functionality for which can be used together with digital TVs. As said, for the services like audio description, subtitling, whatever you can think of, the support of the whole content chain is required there. And last but not least, we think that still some effort needs to be done on market development, and please let us have one market, no fragmentation in this field of DTC accessibility. With that, I would like to conclude.
Thank you very much. Clear views and presentation, and thanks also for sticking to the time. So we'll come back to that. You raised yourself already in your slides a number of questions that we could discuss. Let's first have now the presentation by Edgar Wilson of the European Broadcast Union on their support to members to roll out access or accessibility services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Katjana, I think you're going to need to be quite quick on the triggering, because there are quite a few slide animations in there. So let's get into the presentation, please. Basically, I'll start by explaining who the EBU are. I'm sure lots of you know about the EBU, but just in case there's any gaps in your knowledge, we're 60 years old this year. We were founded back in the days when it was very much black and white and probably very few lines to a television picture. And we have 75 members in 56 countries. So we spread in what's called the European Broadcasting Area, or of the ITU description, rather than the member states of the European Union. We're also very close to a lot of associate members around the world. And this gives us great strength in obviously trying to exploit the economies of scale that Frank was talking about. Our main headquarters are in Geneva, with the technical department, legal department, TV and radio departments, which deal with production and programming, and the Eurovision control. And, of course, some people will know about the Eurovision Song Contest, which attracts some 100 million viewers every May. We do have a public affairs department here in Brussels. Next slide, please, Katjana. As I said, there are a lot of broadcasters we're working with, and they're, generally speaking, to comply with our statutes, they're publicly funded, usually by the license fee or from some state funding sometimes. But they can be commercially funded, and it's quite confusing for some people, even within the EBU, that some of our members are advertising funded. But they do have public service obligations that they have to meet. Access services, from our perspective, started a long time ago with InVision subtitling, what we these days seem to call interlingual subtitling for foreign language programs, but cut into the picture. But with the invention of teletext back in 1974 in the UK, there was this new expression, on-demand. We could have on-demand subtitles for the hard of hearing. Teletext subtitles started in the sort of mid-70s. But frankly, at that time, a teletext subtitling decoder cost around about £1,000. They were rather large trays placed under the rather nice walnut cabinet of the television set. And it wasn't until the 80s, really, that teletext was becoming a mass market feature in TV sets. And we've always had this problem of chicken and egg. We cannot, as broadcasters, serve a population unless the receiver manufacturers and the whole chain, as Frank says, have incorporated the technology. The technical committee of the EBU is... Sorry, could you just go back one? Yeah. We always share our information. We have regular meetings. And, in fact, what we found in Harant at the end of the 1980s was that teletext, of course, there were two types. There was teletext and there was Antiope. And there was PAL and there was CECAM and there was a big mixture of standards. And we had to address all of our nations and handle these differences at that time. But we did do one thing, and that was we actually paid money and we bought the authorship rights to what had been called the World System Teletext Specification. And we published it as the European Teletext Specification. And we took it to the ETSI Standardization Institute. And I think that made a big trigger change in the use of teletext. Around that time, our French colleagues at Antenne 2, which is now France 2, started to broadcast teletext. And teletext then became a medium around the whole of Europe and a single approach that could be used. And, of course, the products in any case were now including such teletext decoders as were needed. So subtitling could take off then, and we could have people working on it. Thank you. Next slide. We've also worked on the production side of this technology, and we found there was a problem with sharing subtitles between different broadcasters. So we came up with an industry standard for subtitling data exchange, something where the files are .stl. That was back in 91. In 92, there was a European project called Auditel on audio description, and what was then the Independent Television Commission was very much involved with that. And if you read those reports now, it's very good material. It really covers the whole of the audio description area, but of course set against the background of analog TV and a little bit of digital audio called NICAM. Next slide, please. But let's go back a stage now. If you are talking about technology, that's one thing, and manufacturing small extra pieces of technology in a large number of products can be very inexpensive. But when you come to have to implement the services, you've got to expect broadcasters to look at this as being something they have to find money for. And it's not just a question of making one investment, if you like, in capital expenditure. You're now talking about an operational cost per hour of television. So an audio description decoder in a TV set is great to have as a target object for the sending of the service. But every hour that we make an audio-described program costs us thousands of euros, the extra cost. And you know what the world is like at the moment, very financially strapped. So it isn't easy to do a comparison about it and to do a big encouragement of people to do more and more hours of audio description, for instance, as an isolated feature. It has to be considered against all the other costs that make up television broadcasting. What we do is we have, in the television production world, we have the teletext and subtitling group. We meet quite regularly with that group, and we share best practice, of course. But we also talk about the various access services that are there, and we have invited guests at the Eurovision Television Summit in Lucerne once a year. We have people from the other sides of the value chain, if you like, presenting to the broadcasters, people from different parts of the disability community. And we do our best, if you like, to encourage them to realize that the technology is now advancing, it's available in the home, and that they should be targeting it. Thank you. We also carry out surveys from time to time to really get a grip on the figures for the different access services in use, and we publish these results widely. What we've seen is a gradual increase in the use of access services, but with the financial difficulties that we're presently in, and in some cases restructuring of organizations and decimation of some of our public service corporations and organizations, it's very difficult to put the pressure on, if you like, to encourage access services in isolation against all the other costs that the broadcasters have. But what we generally believe is that if we share best practice, we talk about efficiency and how you can make the best use of live subtitling and what technology is the best available in the market in terms of cost per hour of use, that we will find that our members are themselves already highly motivated to offer these access services, and they will look for budgets and try to find the money that they'll need for that. Next slide, please. With digital distribution, we've heard a lot about the digital switchover, and of course the EBU members themselves have been contributing a lot, both in cost and in technology to this. But it does mean that access services should potentially be more easily available and certainly more user-friendly. But it's very diverse around Europe, and the next slide, please, shows, in this case, black means no analog television, and the lighter the colour, probably there is no digital television in use in that country yet. That's the reality in October 2010 of the digital terrestrial switchover status. So 2012 is not far away now, and some countries have not even switched on the first transmitter. So to get their populations to go out and buy technology to equip every home with a digital receiver so they can turn off analog, we're some distance and some time away from that reality. Next slide, please. There are some new ideas around. We'll hear about perhaps some later ideas, but we've got this new idea called hybrid broadcast broadband. We used to call it convergent services. And this may be a cost-effective way of adding access services to our programming. If we have, and we know we have very small numbers of potential users of some of these access services, then we can't necessarily justify the capacity in the broadcast channel, but we can do a, provide a service if it's using the internet and synchronizing with the main service in the receiver. So this is technology which is being developed, and certainly I think we'll hear about that later. Next slide, please. We're, of course, always trying to get the word out and do what we can to disseminate information, and we had some very new ideas on display at IBC this year on our EBU stand. We had DTB for All as a co-exhibitor there, and also this group we call the Broadcast Technology Futures Group, which is a combination of all the broadcasting research labs from the world, in fact, so including Japan and including Canada. Next slide, please. So on our stand at IBC, which is, of course, a professional exhibition. It's not meant for the public. Nevertheless, we devoted a lot of space to barrier-free TV access. So next slide, please. And which included our Japanese friends, BBC, and the RAI from Italy. And the next slide, please, shows DTV for All's part of the stand. And thank you. The next slide. And finally, of course, the future is exciting and offering all sorts of new ideas as well. And in this case, 3D TV is just on the horizon. We are at the EBU. The man in the shadows there wearing the 3D spectacles is a colleague of mine, David Wood, who chairs the DVB's commercial module on 3D TV. And we're contributing to one of the subgroups, which is working on subtitling for 3D at this moment. Obviously, subtitling itself in a 3D environment needs to be placed where it's not obscured by objects which are in front of it. So all sorts of interesting things going on, always working on research and development, always spreading the word. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, also for an excellent presentation. So now we have, I think, a bit more of a complete picture in terms of what is happening in this area. Having heard about the user requirements, the potential, and as well as, let's say, on the one hand, perhaps the more technical side of the equipment by manufacturers and the production of accessible content and distribution by broadcasters, and the various plans, but also barriers that are in the way. So perhaps we can spend a bit of time now on some discussion on these barriers. Although there has been progress, one of the indications, I think, also by Edgar Wilson, is that that it takes time, apparently, for progress to be made. You refer to the example of teletext. And the first question that I actually had is, I know that in the field there are, let's say, high expectations in a certain sense from all of the actors to make progress in this, and at the same time there are also deadlines, so there are also constraints. What do we really learn from the teletext experience to, first of all, accelerate the process of having access services in place, and secondly, to anticipate also for new developments? Would you Care to say, could you say something more about that?
Well, I think we've learned the lesson of teletext, if you like, because we had diversion. We had different research labs doing things in different countries when we didn't get together, if you like, at a moment when we might have done to avoid the competition that subsequently arrived, which then meant that manufacturers had to make more products and they were therefore more expensive and so on. We learned that back in the early 90s, and the DBB project is the obvious good example that we can quote there. DVB still goes on, and as I said, we're working on the 3D TV subtitles and 3D TV in general, and we do what we like to think of as pre-competitive sharing of knowledge. We meet in all constituencies, the broadcasters, the network operators, the manufacturers both of professional equipment and of consumer equipment. We have a few regulators and administrations present as well. And in that sort of circumstance, and literally in the open discussion, without great constraints of IPR, if you like, although there are fair and reasonable terms for sharing of IPR, it has proven to be in the broadcasting world a winning formula, certainly much more effective, we feel, than the other models around other places, the sort of American model of the way that the ATSC developed its digital television market. And with all of those actors present, we feel that the sharing of knowledge is the opportunity we can really try to spread knowledge around, get everybody involved, and hopefully it's been working very well. The access services side, there are certain pockets of expertise, and I think we have to take our hats off to the BBC here. And of course, the engineers working in DVB, remarkably, are also getting a little older and becoming more aware of the need for access services as time goes on. It's not something that selfishly I'm thinking of only for me, but I know that I will benefit in my next phase of life after working as an engineer. And I think there's that sort of general acceptance that we, digital technology, providing we get in early and contribute and do this sort of building of excellent specifications, we can make it very easy at the end to implement. The electronics are not expensive in themselves, but they're very expensive if we forgot to include them at the time of the design of the specification.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, please.
Thank you. I would like just to hear from your side the needs for e-skills, especially for disabled persons, because everyone speaks about e-skills, but for let's say those or not necessarily for disabled persons, and I do believe this is a market niche which is underestimated, but in the same time it is a huge demand from the societal point of view, and I would like to listen from you what do you think we need to do in order to ensure the right e-skills for disabled persons. Thank you.
I think you're asking the wrong person, I'm afraid. But certainly a lot of our broadcast material is a lot of education, a lot of training and so on, and a lot of activity which is aimed at people who can benefit from, taken as an external issue. The e-skills one, I'm not an expert in, but maybe some of our friends are.
I see that Mr. Looms would like to react to that.
Just very briefly, it's then a question looking at the e-skills of the person as an individual or the person in his or her own network. We've got research from the UK, we've got research from Portugal and other places. It's not looking at the individual in isolation, but also in their particular network. So certain rural communities tend to be very good at helping each other. Surprisingly, those living in blocks of flats on their own may not even know their next-door neighbour. So it's both a question of the skills the individual has, but also the skills their network has. And then the general, we know that in a country like Denmark, 37 or 38% of the population don't have even basic ICT skills, and we're supposed to be among the most advanced of the nations. So we need to look at this issue quite seriously, because it's often age related too.
So, Itagaki,
want to react to that? Not as an engineer, but as an educator in the university. Now, in these days, most of the universities start talking about digital literacy, how to use ICT equipment, and also, especially in our university, especially those technological departments, we start talking about learning outcome has to include digital literacy. So that's the reason everybody can use computer, internet, as an extension, of course, those digital TV should be able to understood by those ordinary, especially young generation. That's one of the targets we actually been imposed over that.
I think, if I may give my personal view here, that's a really pertinent question that you ask here. We have one project running, which is T-Seniority, which is about bringing digital content on digital television or internet-enabled television to elderly people. And as I understand it, they highly appreciate the content, but it also requires to develop a certain degree of digital skills. And that immediately is a lead-in to more accessible digital television. It's a kind of a driver for that, so it's a very strong connection. Yes, please.
My own experience in Ireland is that the most successful digital skills initiative has been where the government has funded, they've called for funding applications from small groups, and typically the groups they funded have been groups like the Active Retirement Network, which is, and there's something like about 80 of these active retirement groups all over Ireland, and it's a number of retired people get together, and they do all sorts of things. They do singing and dancing, but they also do e-skills, and there's been a fantastic number of people taught to use the internet and email and things like that through these, and they're community-based, and a lot of them are rural as well.
The questions. Sorry, Mr. Kosa, and then please go ahead. Yeah, you waved your hand first, so you go ahead then.
Okay. A couple of things. Just on the e-skills thing, it's not a great area of expertise for me. I know that the UK government identified some areas where it felt it needed to do a lot of work for not just for disabled people, but for older people and for a lot of people who are not using the internet. So it's a very broad kind of challenge for society, and obviously disabled people are found within that challenge, as it were. But there is another side to that, I think, which is also simplicity. There's the skills of the individual, but linked in with that is what kind of ICT equipment, whether it's TV or other things, are you trying to use? And for instance, Frank was talking about some of the things that TV industry has done, just making audio description easily findable on a television rather than requiring you to press 5 or 6 different buttons on your remote control and know the sequence. Those kind of changes effectively reduce the need for e-skills to some extent as well. It's just a very simplistic example, but I think that's also an important aspect to bear in mind. So there's two sides to that coin. But I just wanted to pick up on something that Frank said. It wasn't so much to ask a question. I guess it was more really to just observe and support what Frank was saying about market fragmentation and the need to avoid that. We in the user groups, I think, would just need to underline that we are very aware of these issues. It's not just because we represent user groups that we only think about user needs and our knowledge and our thoughts stop there. We're very mindful of the fact that if we want those user needs to be met, we need to think about how the world really works. And one way that the world works is obviously commercial organizations like ones that Frank represents need to try and keep their costs down so that they will actually provide product. We also, in RNIB, developed the Smart Talk digital TV box, which, unless I'm very much mistaken, was appeared on the screen when Mark McGuinness was doing his intervention earlier as being the one more or less accessible box that's in the market at the moment. And that box is more expensive than some other boxes on the market. It's not the cheapest you will find. So we're aware of that. That's for a reason we've had to build that, and we're selling that in relatively low numbers compared to mainstream boxes in the market. So obviously that again makes us very mindful of the cost issue. So just to summarize, the point that I want to make linked to all of that is the specification that we're working on, which Frank Kampermann mentioned, well, there's the functional requirements and then the specification about talking TV that provides a talking version of the on-screen menus, is hugely important for us, and we really do hope that we will finalize that work towards the end of this year, because that will, we think, provide the base across Europe for manufacturers to really be able to make product, sell it to the market, and make a huge impact on the amount of accessibility for disabled people, especially those who are blind and partially sighted. I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Kosa.
Just a short question, giving my perspective. I'm wondering whether there will be a response from the European Commission or some of the presenters on this, but my question is there a report about the legal background or legal requirements when people say that there are good examples in the UK? Why is it that we have good examples in the UK? Is it because of the legislative framework that they find themselves within? I know in the UK in 1995 they had a Broadcasting Act which mandated full accessibility for disabled people and for deaf people and hard of hearing people via subtitles. In other countries, there is no legislative framework for that accessibility. So my question is, do we have a survey or report looking at the countries across Europe and seeing what legal requirements there are for accessibility in general?
Perhaps actually RNIB would like to briefly react to the situation in the UK and what, in your view, the effect of legislation has been there.
Okay, well, I apologize for having just talked at length and now doing so again to some extent. But yes, it's a very good question, if I may say so. We are very aware that, for instance, when it comes to access services across Europe, audio description, subtitles and so on, although the figures, the statistics to show exactly the level that those are at in the different EU countries is somewhat lacking, and I was talking to Peter Looms about this earlier, who has some good ideas about improving that situation, we know, and I've done a study on this, that there is a very direct correlation between the level of, for instance, audio description and the legislative requirements that may or may not be in place in a given member state. In the UK, it's no coincidence that we had a requirement in law for 10% of all programs to be audio described, and that we, generally speaking, the broadcasting community in the UK achieved that target, and they're now surpassing it, and we're going towards 20%. So these legislative requirements make a huge impact on the situation on the ground, and without them, very often you see that there's a complete paucity of access services, for one.
Let me add a little bit to it, because you also asked what is the European Commission doing in this area. On the one hand, there is, of course, the follow-up of the Audiovisual Media Services Directive and the monitoring of the implementation of that directive. So in that, there is the specific Article 3C. In addition to that, we are at the moment running a study which is a follow-up of an earlier monitoring study on e-accessibility that has one component specifically on digital television and is making an inventory of the legislative situation in across Europe. And also, in the same spirit as the earlier study that we did, it tries to relate the level of legislation to the effect in the market. So does it actually, can you see that there is a relationship which is suggested by
RNIB that there is in the UK, but can you see that there is a relationship between the presence of legislation and the provision of accessibility services? So indeed, the study is not only covering digital television, but also web accessibility, as well as the accessibility of self-service terminals. It is another component in what we call this framework of policy actions, studies, projects, legislative support, awareness creation. I think that we will have the results of that. I'm looking at my colleague Miguel Gonzalez early next year. Yeah, early next year we are going to have results of that activity. So happy to keep you informed. Should probably move forward to the demo, but we are discussing now. Let's first have a further question. Please go ahead.
I am Nicola Giorgi from STOA. I have to acknowledge that I am not knowledgeable in the field, so perhaps my questions would be not very appropriate, but let's try. One of the issues which I noticed in one of the presentations is the lack of market demand for certain products. My question is, in fact, why is this lack? I mean, is these products which are aimed for disabled people, usually we have, for instance, a TV set which may incorporate these features from the very beginning, and if somebody is disabled can use it or not, or may not use it. So in my opinion, that we could have products which are above fitted for this purpose. In this way, it is not a new product which you have to put on the market, but it is a product which has a feature, an extended feature. I don't know whether this is feasible or not. The second issue is, which struck me, it was, if I understood correctly, teletext, in fact, became widespread once it has been standardized. I noticed about the standardization of text to speech. What about if standardization occurs all across the value chain? Could this help to get through many, many problems which we encounter today? Third issue is that I will have a presentation of our project, one of our projects on ICT and media, which, it was completely different, so it was not specifically aimed to this purpose, but it has certain features. In this project, there are certain things which have been established. One of these is that apparently the future will bring a convergence of technologies, a convergence between Internet and digital TV, for instance. And I did not see here yet the exploitation of this possible convergence. Thank you.
Okay, that's very pertinent questions. Later there will be a presentation about HBB TV, and that is an example of convergence. Quite interesting that you raised that. Perhaps Frank would like to react to the experiences on the market demand, also given the fact that you now have introduced certain accessibility features since a while, so perhaps you have more experience with the market reaction.
Yeah, so what we see is that there is not specific, let's say, large market reaction on these type of items. An example is the audio description button on a remote control. If it's not there, we don't get complaints about that or something. Yeah? So people are not directly asking for it or not saying we want a TV with such a button. So that's an example. I think your question was also what might be the reason here. And in my opinion, that's twofold. One is simply numbers. And the second one is, I think, awareness. The first one, to say something about numbers, if you look at visually disabled people, and maybe I can be corrected by RNIB, but according to to some report of the United Nations, it's approximately 1.5% of the population who has more or less severe problems with sight. Yeah? And compared to, let's say, 98% of the rest of the population, that's quite a difference. So that's one item. And I think the second one simply is awareness that many people might just not know what, from a technical point of view, is just in the market and which you can buy.
Okay. The question about standardization, perhaps I can bounce that back to Mr. Wilson, because you are one of the parties in the value chain, and I think there is an explicit invitation also in a certain sense through this meeting to be all in a partnership for cooperation. So as one of the partners in the value chain, what do you think about that standardization across the value chain?
I don't think there's a particular problem. I think we literally in the value chain now have everybody present in groups like DVB and so on. But I've got to raise another issue, actually. That map that I showed the patchwork quilt of the diversity of Europe in terms of just one thing, which is digital terrestrial television take-up. But that patchwork quilt is not just, let's say, the digital divide. It's not just the haves and the have-nots. That came about for all sorts of interesting reasons. And during the development of that patchwork quilt, in 12 years of development, various technological improvements have taken place. We cannot stop the improvements that are made in the technology. So actually, we will end up in Europe with a switched-off analog system and just digital, but possibly three or four different variants of digital systems. And the next one will be 3D. So we can do our best at a certain moment in time, and we do, and everyone tends to these days to be present and to make useful contributions to that standardization approach. But nevertheless, technology evolves, and to some extent, that's a wonderful opportunity that we've got to take on board as well.
We should go deeper into your question, but I want to round it off, so I'll just give one opportunity to Peter Looms, and then you have to move to the demo.
Very briefly, the awareness issue. I think it's necessary to look in each territory, not just on putting access services in place, but also spending some resources to make sure that people are aware of their existence and actually know how to set them up. If you do one thing without the other, nobody wins. So we're producing services, you're producing building boxes, and they're not being used. So I think it's a question of perhaps changing the balance of the budget so there's also more resources to make sure that awareness is in place and the other stages, the other three stepping stones actually are in place too.
It would be great if the parties that are around the table here could agree on perhaps a certain target for raising that awareness and work on that jointly, because that will pull through also the cooperation and the connection between the demand and the supply. Perhaps you have to look at something like the Olympic Games or an occasion that will occur in the near future that can be really a landmark to make progress in this. I know there are more questions and points to raise, but let's move to the demo part, because I also know that this room can only be held for a limited time. I'm not quite sure how the demo part will be run, whether we stay seated here or that we have to gather around the screens, but can I leave that to Mr. Itagaki? And then I will also hand over the chairing of this meeting to Miguel González Sancho, my deputy, who will chair the second part of that.
Netherlands 2. Scrambled program. Now 23:14, 23:49. Nova stroke Den Haag Mandag, NOS stroke NPS stroke Mara. Next 23:49, 1:26. Holland Dog. 24H Berlin, Vipro.
Okay. So in my presentation, I mentioned text-to-speech and the cooperation we have there with the EDF and the user groups. So during the work on that, what we did was also looking, okay, what is possible with a TV and not. And what you see here is a research prototype. So you cannot buy this in shops, to be very clear about that. But it gives an impression on text-to-speech, which you can have with an integrated digital television. There are examples with set-top boxes, but as said, this is a television. What we see here is a somewhat modified production model, and right to that a laptop, and that's the external text-to-speech device, so that outputs the sound, and they are both connected via an internet link. So the television has a number of items, and you don't see a program now, but for example, if you would go to the channel grid, which is this, it shows all the channels which are installed on the television, and it also shows on what channel number they are. And if you start navigating this, you hear, okay, on channel 3 there is ProSieben.
For service 1.
Service 1 on channel 4, exactly.
And 8, Netherlands 2.
Netherlands 2 is on 8. That's a little bit strange, but it's on 8. And if you then would select this one,
Netherlands 2.
It states on which channel the TV is going to, so you
scrambled
get that feedback.
Now 23:14, 23:49. Nova stroke then hard man not NOS stroke NPS stroke Mara. Next 23:49:126.
So Holland what?
Dog, 24H Berlin Vpro.
Okay, what it does now is when you switch a TV to a certain channel, it also gives on the top line, okay, which program is currently running and which will be the next program. That was shown on the screen, and also that is spoken out loud. And this enables visually impaired people to, yeah, let's say, to know what they are watching, or what is on the screen, and to know what will be there. So this is for normal operation of the TV. Let's say the normal viewing. You can also go into menus.
Entering home screen.
This is
TV.
For this TV. This is all the items you can access, and for
Browse,
example,
if I
would go to setup, I
setup.
Come in the menus of the television, and it states on which item is highlighted in the menu. If you, let's say, would do this for a consumer model, then you need a little bit more. Because you also need to say how many items there are to not get lost. So, for example,
picture,
if you would go to sound then
base, zero,
can hear to hear,
zero,
and you can also put
zero
some settings. For example, base
minus two,
or a little bit
minus
more.
Zero, base, zero, sound,
and go back. So this is in a nutshell.
Computer.
Oh, now I select the input of the computer.
Entering home screen. Seen it. Watch TV.
Let's go back to watch TV.
Netherlands 2.
And go back to the channel grid.
8 Netherlands 2.
So what you see here is a prototype which we used for let's say also developing the specifications. And to see what is required, and this is, let's say, a somewhat better version of this, because this is not yet useful for the consumer market. This is the idea what you should get once the specifications we are working on are finalized, and what, from a technical point of view, should be possible. So, in sense, everything, or at least a number of the most important parts, which the TV shows on the screen, will be spoken out loud, so it will help visually impaired people in navigating on what's happening on the TV.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Am I planning EPG and teletext to be read out?
So teletext not, but EPG yes. It's in this setup. There is no EPG. It's not transmitted. But with the user groups, so we are talking about what should such a TV be able to do, and we have made some profiles. But with the user groups, we agreed that, let's say, the basic stuff which you have in EPG, so the service name, the number, etc., should be in the basic profile, so that there would also be text-to-speech available for EPGs, yes. Not in this demo, but...
You could use it as too with an existing device in Germany, maybe could do some exchange.
So this is a demo setup. And also the protocol running from the TV to the laptop, that's what we currently are specifying. And that we intend to send that specific work to the UPnP forum. So it will get, let's say, standardized on a worldwide level.
I'd like to ask you if you work closely with the associations of blind persons. Because I don't know if for them the sound is good enough, if it is clear enough, and I do believe you need... have a test bed and to work closely with them because they know better than us which are their needs.
Yes. We work together with the blind association, so let's say RNIB is often is normally on the table. But what I need to say here is that in this case the text-to-speech converter is external from the TV. What we use in this demonstration is an open source text-to-speech conversion program. There are better quality in the market. But given the fact that we have an interface specification, you could more or less attach anything you like in your own voices, in your own quality, in your own language. And I agree with you. I mean, this is... To get that right, it's specialized. You need to get that right for the people that's intended. But that should be done by that device, which is currently mimicked by a laptop.
It's all open source.
Now, the text-to-speech converter program is an open source program. So that can be used in this case, but it has some issues. For example, there were some remarks on quality. It cannot support all European languages, so it's not, let's say, the solution. Yeah. So there are also solutions available which are commercial, or maybe are free of charge for one certain country, but for other countries you have to pay licenses. Yeah, and that. Given, I mean, some time ago someone said to me, so, yeah, okay, what is the issue with paying €3 of license cost? But the issue there is if you sell 50 million TVs, it's €150 million adding to your cost.
If you think of the switch over from pay to system to this.
Sorry, too? No, if I understand your question correctly, so if you have pay TV or, let's say, free-to-air TV, for this television, it doesn't matter.
It's compatible enough at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter for this team. No. And shall I switch to...
Eight Netherlands 2. And browse. See. Computer. 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 No video signal. No video signal. No video signal.
It sounds like the GPS sound, Can you change the voice?
Hi there. This is just basically the BBC demo of audio description and subtitles. It's the currently existing services that are widely available in the UK. So fortunately, we don't have any sound, but as you see, if there's no speech, the audio description comes through. I'm not sure what's happening, Sam, but as you see with the subtitles as well, we have different colour codes for different speakers. As I say, this is widely available, and it's just what's available in the UK at the minute. Take your attention to the TV now. Basically, what this is demonstrating is now the hybrid broadcast IP service. Unfortunately, we don't have the HPB demonstration. This is just like a open source prototype of the IP signer service. So what you have here is just like the live TV going on, and the user has the ability to choose between, like... Okay, here we go. So what the user does is now just select that he wants the IP signer service. Okay, so if there is an IP signer with the associated live TV content, you see like a signal from the broadcast. This can either come over IP or over DVB. So it's just a simple signaling information. So For the user, once he sees that, then he automatically knows there's an IP signer, and all he does is press the red button, and then the associated signer comes over IP. So it's literally a few buttons, and you have your signer coming over IP. So the benefits of those were previously outlined in the presentation. If there's a small subset of the population that does require the IP signer service, then these are easily made available through IP to them at a very low cost compared to the broadband bandwidth required on the DVB network. So this is, unfortunately, you don't have a sound on this as well, so a few technical difficulties, but... I think you get the concept here. So we can then just... So you have, like, the IP demo TV guide. So the other thing with this is once the user has also... You could have the user already logged in straight away. So if we do go back to live TV... okay, so... Yeah, so that's live TV. So if it's automatically, say, once you set up your set-top box, to automatically, as soon as the IP service, it should automatically switch to it, so there's no, like, pressing loads of buttons. So it automatically goes to the IP signer service. So it's literally like a seamless service, so that will make it very easy for people just to use the IP signer service over. So... Okay, there you go. So it's just literally setting up once in your set-top box, and then as soon as the service comes through, it will automatically change, and then there's no pressing the red button, no going through elaborate menus. As soon as it's there, it will switch to your IP signer. And if there's no IP signer, it will just switch back to live TV. Okay, so this is like a just like a technological solution that is open source, that is... which broadcasters with any manufacturers would need cooperation with the signal information. But from a technological point of view, it's not a technological feat, should I say. So it could be done quite easily, and expect it to do like with a bit of cooperation and through a bit more, let's say, pushing from your guys, we could actually get it done in the near future. Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what's happening. So that's your live TV, and then the actual signer will come through the IP as opposed to the DVB broadcasting network.
But for the user, they're looking at their TV set.
Yeah.
They don't have to know whether it comes from one place or the other. Then it's still television.
Yeah, the whole experience should be seamless. I mean, you don't want to like wait there and then see like, oh, loading content coming through signer. For the user, you would just see literally it's just a change of like frames, and that's how it'd be. So it should be seamless and then integrated service, should I say.
I know some digital receivers, set-top boxes and televisions have internet connectivity already. What's involved in going from what's on the market at the moment to what you're talking about? Can that just be put in with a bit of a middleware or something?
The main issue is actually the signaling from the DVB side. So like, how do we know there's an IP signer video? So there has to be like from the head end, the broadcast side, saying, okay, there's now IP signer video, so how do we signal this to the end user? So at the moment there's that missing link between the broadcaster and the internet enabled TVs, like you said, like the middleware. So as long as we have like the metadata or signal information that goes to the internet enabled TVs or set-top box, we can then access these IP signer services quite easily. So it's literally that middleware missing that needs to be done at the minute.
Maybe, yeah. Mark, if you look at, for example, middleware.
Yeah.
If you look at, for example, middleware, which is currently starting to being deployed in Germany, that's HBB TV. And with that type of systems, it would be possible to signal and also indicate where this type of content may be found. Okay. Yeah. So the platforms are coming for signaling, the platforms are coming.
One more remark on that. We, together with IRT, we have a similar implementation in DTV for All, which is based on HBB TV, and it's at the moment, because the existing devices haven't got two parallel encoders for videos, like for the signing video and the main video. The approach we took in this prototype thing was to pull the like a video on demand, including a signing video. Okay, so we have an application for that, and we tested simultaneous translation, very close simultaneous translation through buffering, which is possible now, and we tested the real world problem, and we also tested a signer running ahead, which, because we thought that might maybe be interesting for people, and so on. So there is another prototype application, that is one approach, and there's another one. And if you're interested, we have the results will be published this autumn in one of the deliverables. Okay. Who else?
So this demo is just basically a demonstration of the broadcast IP and hybrid TV services. So as I say, it's commercially available in Germany with the HBB platform, but it's you're seeing a lot of these internet-enabled TVs now, like you get Google TV, and you're getting now BBC iPlayer, which is commonly, it's all to do with this convergence. So in the near future, we should be able to do this provide this service quite easily to all sorts of people and all types of users, really. If any further questions, just... I think that's it, really. Yeah, okay, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this very interesting presentation that allows all of us to have a very concrete experience of what accessible TV means. We're going to continue with the program with a couple of presentations. Next speaker is Mrs. Bettina Heidkamp.
Hello. Thank you for coming, and I'm really happy I can present you some of our results obtained in DTV for All. Let me just very quickly introduce who we are. We are a public service broadcaster for the capital of Germany, for Berlin. So we are catering for about 6 million people with our services. We are a member of the ARD, which is Europe's largest broadcasting network. And apart from offering TV and radio services, of course, we also offer teletext, interactive things, and more recently, HBB TV services. Next slide, please. Yes, for us, DTV for All was very much about testing new technologies and also existing technologies. And it was very much about putting the user at the focus of attention. So we didn't want just to test technologies, but to know what the users think about them and to get to recommendations. So we had a large-scale field test of DVB subtitles, and we had four smaller tests. One I just mentioned about the signing application, and another one is this HBB TV text application I'm going to talk about today. There you see the good old teletext. It's nearly as old as myself, and I think it looks a bit old-fashioned now, a bit old school, and so we have more modern forms now of subtitles, which are DVB subtitles. They have been mentioned before today. In Denmark, in Great Britain, this is a mature service on air. In Germany, it's still a bit exotic. What are DVB subtitles? For some of you mightn't exactly know what they are, what's the difference. Basically, they are digital subtitles, so you need a digital TV set or a receiver for accessing them. And you just saw it, DVB subtitles are easier to read, they look nicer, and they are compatible with HD. And you can, different from teletext, you can decide the font you are using, the writing, the size of the writing, and also different background styles. It's quite easy to produce DVB subtitles. You just need a software module where you transform those teletext subtitles you are playing out anyway. In Germany, I said, they are not so common. CDF and Arte, public broadcasters, have been broadcasting them since 2007 and 2009. Arte, it's only the HD channel. So for us, for RBB and ARD, they were new when we started DTV for All, and we used the project in order to play them out test-wise, and we wanted to ask users, what do you think these subtitles should look like? There are so many design options. How do you want your subtitles to look like? So we established, for 9 months, we established a user group of 52 people, half hard of hearing people, and the other half was deaf people. So these people got a digital television or a set-top box provided from us at their homes, and actually they filled in a questionnaire every week for 9 months. And they were really loyal, and was a really good cooperation. And this was also due to our cooperation with the Umbrella Impairment Associations in Berlin and Brandenburg. So they actually helped us to recruit the users, and they helped us on a day-to-day basis, for example, for communication, how to do the questionnaires, how to use simple language, how to communicate with these people, and because we were not that experienced. So that's a very good benefit for us from this project. We have a really good cooperation with these associations. And yes, next slide, please. So what did we actually test? Unfortunately, you can hardly see anything on the slide now the way it's displayed, but basically we tested different fonts in different sizes. It was a very systematic approach, I don't want to be too detailed now, and we had variations with different background styles. So the examples here are, I can just explain it to you, is just with an outline around the letters, then with a black box, as you know it from teletext, and the last one shows a more transparent background, which isn't fully black, but the advantage of that is that you can read the subtitles, you have a good contrast, but still for the white letters or colored letters, but you can still see something of the TV picture. So that's what people like most, as you will see in a moment. So I don't want to go into detail. I said it, there was a questionnaire, which was very simple, but which had to be filled in anyway once a week. And evaluating this thing was, our priority was, we want to find a solution which gets broad acceptance. Because as a public broadcaster, we don't want to offer controversial solutions. There were some solutions like these rimmed letters, which cover very little of the TV picture I just showed. They were very popular among a majority of users, but then there were quite a few users who said, no, Mark 6, that's terrible, I don't want that. So we, even though it was popular, we didn't want to choose or recommend that. So that's the best rated design. In the end, you can't really see now, it's better on a TV screen, but it is a transparent background. It's like dark gray, so you can still see some of the picture through. And it's this Tiresias screen font, which was actually developed by RNIB, I think, for fonts on screens, television screens or computer screens. And it's actually the average size which we use at the moment for teletext. So that was the most popular. Next slide. Yes, I think the impact of this project for us, for RBB, was quite nice because, as I said, 2.5 years ago when we started doing our tests, ARD was not really considering DVB subtitles. But funny enough, we published a report now in spring, an internal report about all our results. It's very comprehensive, about 50 pages. And just that summer, then ARD on a nationwide basis has been starting
to plan actually introducing DVB subtitles in Germany on a nationwide basis. And they have said they would like to adopt our recommendations from the project because they were happy that they had finally results from a study, a German study and not an international one, and which was created with the help of users. So, and the other positive thing is that we, that RBB decided to keep up this operation we established in the project, which is on the regional level. Nationwide, what I mentioned first, is satellite transmission, and this now will be kept for Brandenburg. And otherwise, the users would have been quite frustrated as well. It wouldn't, yeah. Okay, now the second part of my presentation. We have mentioned it before today. It's about HBB TV. It's one of these terrible abbreviations. Once again, I start with the second point. What is it? It stands for Hybrid Broadcast Broadband TV, and it's about marrying the two worlds of Internet and TV. And it's a brand new standard which was issued this summer and is supported on a pan-European basis. Basically, new. It's not just about going to the Internet through your television set, but in terms of accessibility, it's interesting because new types of services for television are actually made possible through HBB TV. So we had one service. ARD has been producing a couple of prototype services last year already, and one service, which is called ARD Text, that is modeled on the video text or teletext, but it looks nicer, it looks different. You will see in a moment. And we wanted to take this example and try to make it more accessible, more barrier-free for sight-impaired people. Next slide, please. The quality is very bad now. But anyway, so you see it's an overlay over the TV picture, and you have certain sections, and you just move around these sections, this text service, using the arrow keys on your remote control. And what we did now was that it was quite obvious the writing is too small for people who are visually impaired. We want to have it as large as possible. So together with IRT, our partner in the project, we developed a prototype which helps to adjust the size of the writing for visually impaired people. So you actually switch larger, größer means larger, and you have like a magnifying glass. So wherever you are in this text, where you move around, you have a kind of, like a zoom or a magnifying glass. Next, please. And another option we designed was about better contrast, better colors. The contrast wasn't very good in the existing version, so we offered different color variations because for sight-impaired people or visually impaired people, it's very important to have sometimes specific colors because there are people who can only see yellow and blue, for example. And also to have the utmost contrast. This white on black option you can choose was the most favorite in our tests, the most popular in our tests. And so here you see an enlarged text in another color variation. So now in the end we have 7 different color variations to choose from. And sometimes for people, for example, it's black on white or white on black, they can choose. Okay? So I'm nearly finished here now. Basically, we had a user test with this prototype and with these accessibility features, and we had 9 sight-impaired users, and we really tried to find a group which kind of represents the most prominent disabilities through all kinds of different eye diseases and so on. And again, we could cooperate with the user organization, and that I learned a lot about eye diseases and disabilities. And so the users, were invited to play around with the new service, and they had to perform tasks and so on, give their reactions. So we got a very positive feedback. You can move on, it's okay. there you can see one of our users, again, the contrast isn't very good, funny enough, but you see this woman is using a real world, not a virtual, but a real world, magnifying glass. She is. She has a cataract, she has glaucoma, she's very short-sighted, but she told us she's using teletext, the traditional conventional teletext, every day, and she scans the thing line by line, okay? Because she also has tunnel vision, she can just see certain aspects of the screen, so she can't see the screen as a whole. So basically, we got really good ideas from her, from one of our users. And what the users basically liked was this new type of text, that it was much better because there are new types of displays which offer more contrast. And also, that was the general acceptance. They liked the structure and so on, but they also liked, of course, these accessibility features. Last slide, please. Basically, what's nice, these features, not all of the recommendations were taken over by ARD text because they have journalistic ideas as well and so on, but they did adopt the zoom magnifying functionality. They did adopt the different color variations. They added more color variations, so we have 7. We just asked the users, what would you like? So we have a kind of popular color variations in our results. So we had an enlarged field for entering page numbers and a new full screen mode, because it's irritating for sight impaired people if the TV picture moves behind the text service. So the text service should cover the whole screen. And last but not least, better color buttons. And we would like to, we will write down recommendations now, and we would like to feed them into ARD for further services. That's it.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Heidkamp. I propose we follow the same approach as before, and we go straight to the next presentation from Pablo Romero.
Hi again, thanks for inviting me to present what is effectively some of the results of a large project that we have developed. It has to do with subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing, and what we have done at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona is to gather the work of researchers from different universities across Europe to find out, as we can see in the next slide, what viewers think about subtitles. Now, very often it is said that we need to improve the quality of subtitles. We were looking into the quality, and we wanted to put that into practical use, looking at the reception of the subtitles, so how deaf, hard of hearing, and hearing viewers across Europe receive subtitles for the deaf. What we did was we involved 7 different countries, as you can see there, the UK, Spain, Italy, Poland, Denmark, Germany, and Greece. And we wanted to look at the reception, at the quality of the subtitles from the point of view of the reception, and at the reception from 3 perspectives. First of all, what the viewers think about the subtitles, which we found out through surveys, how they understand the subtitles that are shown on TV, which we found out through questionnaires, and then how they perceive the subtitles. And here's where the kind of more scientific approach comes in, which is we did this with eye-tracking technology, that is, screens that can track both your eyes as you watch subtitles, as viewers who watch subtitles, so we can find out how they divide their attention between subtitles and images, whether they actually have time to enjoy the images as well as reading the subtitles, etc. So we wanted to have as objective a point of view as possible of how the reception of the subtitles are, and then the quality of the subtitles. SDH stands for subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing. As we can see in the next slide, if you can press again. Yeah, thank you. What we have is the surveys helped us to find out what viewers think, questionnaires, what viewers understand, and eye tracking, what viewers see. As you can see there, you can see 2 screenshots of some of the films that we showed, in this case Shrek, and the 3rd photograph is of a person who's being eye-tracked. So she's watching the film, and so in those red dots we can see how she reads the subtitles and then how she looks at the images, yeah? Now, again, the problem with this is that extremely time-consuming, obviously, because we have to go one by one, one viewer by viewer, but we get an overall picture of how everything works. So, again, we're trying to get away from kind of subjective views of how the quality of the subtitles is, and a bit more objective, if possible. If we can go to the next slide. Overall, what we did in the surveys is we looked at the opinion of 1,400 participants. We asked 85,000 questions So that's 12,000 per country. We looked at comprehension with 70 questions per participant. That's almost 13,000 questions. And we looked at the perception of 83,000 subtitles across Europe. As you can imagine, analyzing all this will take us some time, and obviously no time to present much of it here, but at least some of it. Now, in this case, what we found, we tested different ways of subtitles. So we showed the subtitles with different fonts, different sizes, different positions, different colors to identify the different speakers, which is also very important in subtitles for the deaf. And as you know already, subtitles for the deaf include information about the sound, so different ways of presenting that sound. Now, we found out through the questionnaires that the amount, the quantity of the subtitles still is an issue. In many countries, obviously not reaching still the 100% target, like Poland, for example, that's still an issue. Quality, we'll have to go country per country basis. We have to go and analyze each country individually, and I'll move on very quickly to those countries. Live subtitling, still a big issue. We're looking into the main problem, which is the delay between the video and the subtitles. The subtitles are obviously coming in with a bit of delay, and viewers are complaining about this, so we're trying to propose a new solution for this. And it's time to revise current guidelines. Now, if we can move on to the next slide. What we have in Denmark, for example, just to put an example, is three types of subtitles. First, subtitles for foreign language programs, so that's from English into Danish. Now, deaf and hard-of-hearing people are not very happy with these because they do not have non-verbal information, that is information about sounds. Therefore, there's a whole dimension that is lost to deaf and hard-of-hearing viewers there because they don't have information about the sounds that they're actually missing. Now, in those subtitles that are Danish into Danish, that's Danish programs subtitled into Danish for deaf people and hard-of-hearing people, they are happy with them, but some improvements could be made. For example, in the way that subtitles are identifying the different speakers, which is a key aspect of subtitles for the deaf. Again, viewers would benefit also from finding out about these subtitles. They're not very aware of the fact that so many programs have so many subtitles. So again, a bit more awareness should be raised there. If we can move on to the next one. In Poland, what we have is public television. I mean, again, in this study, we have reviewed, first of all, what is out there in every country and then how it could be improved. So all that is there. That's the data for what is shown nowadays in Poland. If we can move on to the results to the next slide. The first priority in Poland is to increase the provision of subtitles. The percentages, as you can see there, are very, very low. There's no roadmap for accessibility, so improvement needs to be made there. Now, viewers are actually in favour of paying a licence fee if the subtitle provision is guaranteed. Now, a big issue is the last one. Most viewers are strongly against editing. Now, when people speak really fast in different programs, in order to allow viewers read all the subtitles, you need to summarize the subtitles very often. Now, that's a big issue, because deaf people don't want summaries because they see that as censorship. They believe that it is the subtitler who's actually deciding what is being shown and what not. That's a big issue. So we need to work closely with deaf and hard-of-hearing people, being two different groups, to find out what they think and how they perceive and view different types of subtitles. In Poland, for example, what we found out was that viewers are strongly against anything that is not literal subtitles, no matter how fast they are. If we can move on to the next one. In Spain, 45 million people with hearing impairments, 1 million people with hearing impairments actually being deaf, and deaf and hard-of-hearing constitute 4 million. Hard-of-hearing being people, obviously, who have lost their hearing later in life. Now, if we move on to the results here in the next slide. Now, it's difficult to see now, but I can just explain it. What we have in Spain is a case of the position of the subtitles needing to be changed. because so far we have a position in which you have subtitles at the bottom and the sounds at the top. Now, with the eye tracking, we could see that viewers were not finding enough time to read the subtitles and look at the images. Their eyes were set on the subtitles, having only 20% of the time to look at the images. That, again, needs to be changed, so we're recommending changes there. If we can move on to the next one. In Italy, very varied landscape is a dubbing country. Most of what you get on TV is dubbed. But there are subtitles as well, and we have a big division between deaf people who go by habits. They want to keep what's been shown so far, the conventions that have been shown so far. Hearers go by aesthetic criteria, which is completely different. And hard-of-hearing people go for usefulness. Now, that gives us different results, which are published in our website if you want to go more in detail. In terms of comprehension, we can see how deaf viewers really rely on the visuals, and they spend a lot of time looking at the visuals, whereas hard-of-hearing, that is, people who have had hearing, once upon a time they could hear and they can no longer hear, they rely on the text. And especially, they complain if there is no synchrony between the image and the subtitles, because and the sound as well, because they can rely on their residual hearing, and they complete what they miss there with the subtitles. So if you happen to change anywhere in the subtitle, they will complain because they cannot use that as a complementing device. If we move on to the case of the UK, now, again, what we are seeing here is a big difference between deaf and hard-of-hearing people. Deaf people are more dependent on the subtitles because they need to get just about everything from the subtitles. They are very resourceful in terms of finding out how and when a program is subtitled. They're knowledgeable about the ins and outs of subtitling, and they're open to changes and innovations in the subtitles. In the case of hard-of-hearing people, we're finding that this is not so much the case. So that's a big difference. Some people say that perhaps different subtitles should be provided for deaf and hard-of-hearing people. Now, that's a possibility we're exploring as well with the digital switchover. If we move on to the next part, DVD subtitles are seen as more reliable in the UK than TV subtitles, but TV subtitles, when they actually work fine, they are preferred because they have colours, and our viewers across Europe actually want colours to identify the different speakers. A matter of how many colours and which colours, that's what we're looking at too, but we need more projects for this. If we can move on to the next one. Live subtitles, massive issue, also a very big issue. Now, the problem is there was a very negative opinion of live subtitling in the UK, even if 100% is being subtitled, because, and we found that people are not aware of how they are made, and they have unrealistic expectations of speech recognition technology to produce live subtitles. They believe that speech recognition technology is at the stage where no human intervention is needed and 100% accuracy could be achieved. And that's not the case. So what we need, if we can move on to the next part, is we're making a documentary with the BBC in order to familiarise people, get people more familiarised with the complexity of live subtitling, what is involved, and the current state of speech recognition technology to show that 100% accuracy and no delay is still very, very difficult, and we're going there, but it's difficult to get there now, to achieve that level. In terms of pre-recorded subtitles, well, digital channels, some of them are still not meeting the 100% target, so viewers are complaining about this, and we find that viewers are actually very flexible, and they can cope with different subtitling conventions, which we were quite surprised about. So they can cope with DVD having a certain type of subtitles and TV having completely different subtitles. And if we move on to the next one, I'm just finished. Well, all this will be published in a book which will include the legislation in every country, how this legislation has affected the reception of subtitles, and we're looking at what viewers in Spain, Poland, Italy, Greece, Germany, the UK and Denmark not only think about the subtitles they have, what views they want they have in terms of improvements, and how they perceive the subtitles and understand them as well. Again, there's been quite painstaking research, because you have to, in order to achieve data for overall groups of people, you need to deal with individual persons, one by one, sitting down with them and looking at the screen and asking questions, perhaps sometimes an hour with each individual. So DTV for All has been a fantastic project for this, but it's just like a first step. We need to move forward. And if we are to talk about quality and how everything can be improved from the point of view of the subtitles, we need more projects as well as apart from this one, and this should be like the beginning of one. This is just a tribute to the researchers who have worked on the project, and we don't have photographs for all the viewers, of course, but again, we'd like to pay tribute to them for their help. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much to you both for these two extremely interesting presentations and all this wealth of information. We are running a bit behind the schedule, and I'm told that we really need to finish by noon 15, so that's what we will do. But perhaps a couple of quick reactions, comments from participants before moving to the next presentation, question. Otherwise, we will leave. I will leave that for the lunch. Yes, Mr. Cosa.
I have a short question regarding the quality. Has there been any research or comparative studies with regarding to other broadcasters in the world? I'm thinking, for example, in the United States, they follow very different systems or use very different systems, and their subtitling isn't quite as good. And their subtitling is actually quite complete and full. In Europe, we encounter many problems with the teletext. We find that the text doesn't match in synchronicity with the image that are viewed. So I'm just wondering about other studies elsewhere in the world.
As far as we know, and we are beginning now to establish that link with the United States that sometimes is a bit forgotten. We're sometimes working as two separate units or entities. There seems to be two different traditions. In the States, there is a tradition for literal subtitles. That is, subtitles containing every single word that is being said, no matter how fast the subtitles are. Mostly because they have a tradition of the tradition comes from court reporting, and in trials you need to subtitle and to show and transcribe every single word, and that's been also applied on TV. In Europe, what we find is that in different countries, deaf groups have different views. Some of them are happy to have subtitles slightly summarized if that allows them to watch more of the images, whereas other groups believe that any kind of summarizing, no matter how little meaning you lose, means censorship. And they say, we want the same as hearing people, therefore we want every single word. Now, that I can't really say that that applies to every country, but we're looking into the specificities of every country so that we can take them into account, and especially to see whether and how much of the image you can see as well as reading the subtitle. And for that, we need the research with the eye tracking, but different countries have different views, and different groups within countries have different views. So that's what we're looking at.
Just one quick question. The hard of hearing, they are okay with edited subtitles, are they? Or is that...
Again, it's difficult to generalize, even okay. In one country, but for example, just to give you an example, we asked in the UK, deaf and hard of hearing, independently, what do you think about summarizing subtitles, a little bit or literal? Now, we had a 48-52%, so very, very even, 52 for literal subtitling. Now, the difference between deaf and hard of hearing in that case was when we asked the reasons why they wanted that, those who wanted summarizing, they didn't really explain the reasons. Those who wanted literal were very vocal about why they wanted literal. And here comes the difference in our case, between deaf and hard-of-hearing. Hard-of-hearing people wanted literal because they said, I want to have everything in the subtitles, everything that I once upon a time used to get when I could hear. So I want to have everything there. And I want 100% of the content. Deaf people were more going for identity issues, saying, we want access to all. We want equality, therefore we don't want censorship. So going for the same thing for very different reasons, because it's different types of population.
Okay, we really need to move on. Not question, but a comment, a reaction, quick.
The subtitles address a number of different audiences. And in the short term, we have these trade-offs. In the medium to long term, we may need to produce a full version and then be able to pass it in different variants. But we need to be aware of, for example, the fact that perhaps 10-15% of the population are poor readers. So we're talking about a combination of impairments. So if you've got a hearing impairment and you're a poor reader, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have 220 words a minute if you can only read about 100 to 150 words a minute. So even if you could do it, you're not going to benefit from it. So there are a number of different trade-offs, so we need to look in the short term and in the medium term at how we resolve the requirements of a wide range of different needs.
Okay, thanks very much. So we're going to move on to last presentation. We're going to hear about relevant work from STOA in this area. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm going to present a project which we had some 2 years ago about looking forward in the ICT media industry in the European context, about concepts, data, and issues which have been raised in this project. The project, if you can go for the next slide, please. The contents of the project and of this presentation, in fact, it is the setting of the STOA project, topics of the STOA project, sources and uses used for the report and selected findings from the report, particularly the concepts of network electronic media, the user-generated content and Web 2.0. Among other findings, I would not, also the presentation has contains the micropayment system, the digital rights management and copyright, personalization and privacy exploitation through Web 2.0. I will not emphasize on this because it is not very much related to this workshop, but probably a final conclusion that the future may be the semantic web. The next slide, please. The setting of the STOA project. Mr. Kohl has already introduced STOA panel of the European Parliament. I would say so that our working is done that in such a way that, in principle, MEPs, members of the STOA panel, they raise ideas for projects, and these ideas are developed in specifications which are outsourced to an external contractor. In this case, the contractor used to be the European Technology Assessment Group, led by the Forschungszentrum Karlsruhe, today it's KIT, and its Institute of Technology Assessment, ITAS. STOA projects are not linked with legislation. They are designed in such a way to allow parliamentarians to future issues, and actually what we do is assess the implications, the social and economic implications of different technologies which are to come, and actually not on the short term, which is the legislation, but on the medium to long term, which may be a longer term perspective. In this case, this project, it was about a literature survey, so there have been many sources, I will emphasize a little bit later, used. It was not a genuine research project as such, so it was something which tried to summarize the outcomes of several other works. This literature survey has been validated by external experts, 28 written responses. In the next slide, please. The topics of the STOA report are the concepts, European media industries in the world, the segments of audiovisual mobile games, and there is a large part in the project which deals with games. And actually, you those who do not know, we have printed copies of the project which you can take with you. And there are the several issues which were raised for possible legislative action, the micropayment system, the digital rights management, and spectrum policies, automatic translation, visions of the semantic web, and the games issue. But again, I will not emphasize on these. Let's go to the next slide, please. Which were the main sources taken into account? You can see them here, of course, first of all, the resources of DG Information Society. There was the technology platform of network electronic media, the outcomes, ISTAG. There were consultations, which consultants which were used for this. There were communications and directives used, OECD reports, GRC reports of IPTS, and outcomes of several research framework program projects. Finally, all tended to show a convergence towards the Web 2.0. Now, let's go to the next slide, please. What was identified as a major issue, as a major platform, in fact, it is the network electronic media, which you can see here. Unfortunately, I was not prepared to have such a small slide because I was expecting a full screen. But in fact, you have here the user, the general user, not particularly the one which we are speaking about, the ones which we are speaking about in this framework of this workshop. And we have this user using a digital interactive TV, an online fixed line mobile wireless networks, which are all combined in network, supported by network technologies, and they do have different services available, like publishing, TV programs, music, games, other things. Actually, here we have what is identified, the user's converging media experience. Next slide, please. The project also highlighted the research topics of the technology platform network electronic media, which are the contact creation as an important issue, networking and delivery of infrastructure. We have seen several examples today here. The media presentation and the access of content, and enabling technologies. Well, if we go further to the next slide, please. Some interesting issues which have been identified for the European media industries in this context. There is on-demand viewing is likely to be driven by TV-based platforms, including IPTV, rather than public internet platforms. And this, referring to this, digital content covers online digital streaming, digital movie, TV downloads, video on demand, music downloaded from the internet, music downloaded to wireless phones, online advertising, online video games, wireless video games, electronic books, online gaming. So these were the subjects which were briefly identified as important in the content in the context of digital content. Next slide, please. What has been identified as the shift to digital in the audiovisual sector will present as problems in the near future. It's the first of all, it is that, I have to apologize, this is not very much related to the content of today's workshop. There will be possible to make exact digital copies of files, represented recorded sound or video or motion. There will be no more need to possess a physical artifact such as a tape or a DVD to have these things copied. Like any, these digital files will be able to be transmitted across the internet with no loss of of quality, and much of the equipment needed for this is already available on the market. Therefore, it is usable by anybody. If we go further to the next slide, the shift will bring also other things, like the outreach of the... There are many slides yet, but I will not emphasize on it. It will be more or less the last ones. So what the shift to digital in the audio sector will bring, there is an outreach of the Internet, which will make possible to address this dispersed minority audiences, who might not account a large percentage of any local population, but represent a sufficiently large market to make content distribution worthwhile. Next one would be the addition of the feedback channel for interactive features, which we have seen here in different cases as an interesting point. There will be also an on-demand viewing, which I think in this case would cause a challenge for service providers, for broadcasters, in fact. And there will be a shift in IPTV, in that mobile network of operators, broadband internet service providers, and major internet portals are moving into the platform business. Well, if we have a slide yet, let's go further. These are the selected main findings, which are not interesting in this context. Next slide, please. How the project has identified what computer-based network electronic media means. And it emphasizes also on the user-generated content. Next slide, please. Which it considered important in this respect. And if we go to the Web2 environment, these are figures which underscore success of the net. Let's go further. There are certain features which have been identified. If we go further to the next slide, please. Among the six key topics around which the discussion of the changing media industry business is revolves, there are two, actually, which could be interesting in this context, that there is a long-tail effect, how that niche markets can be exploited, and there is a local webbing, which means that global and local opportunities and media can be addressed for global communities and for local communities, which is an issue in this respect. So I will not say all the rest of the study. Can be used.
Okay.
It can be read by anybody.
Thank you very much for making it in the time. We are almost at the end of the timing. I would like to ask the members of the European Parliament here to have some final words for us, please.
Thank you very much. I'd like, first of all, to thank you all for being here, and also STOA panel and the Commission for their contribution and the work done before. I would like to thank also to the interpreters, which are not here, but also they helped us a lot. Thank you very much. And also to everyone who was following the debate. I just discussed with my colleague, Mr. Adam Kosa, and because 2010 is the European year for combating the poverty and also to eliminate social exclusion, we decide to work together and to have a written declaration within the European Parliament in order to raise the awareness for the importance of barrier-free digital television. You know that for a written declaration we need a majority of MEPs to sign it, and if so, the Parliament will send the request to the text of the declaration to the Commission, to the Member States, so to whom we ask to be sent, and also to initiate an oral debate within the plenary. Maybe we will try to be followed by a resolution. But this should be done. We just discuss and we have to start working on. I do believe the digital agenda is one of the key priorities of the European Union for the years to come. And for this reason, I do believe that barrier-free digital television should be an important part of the digital agenda for the period to come. Of course, the standardization is crucially important because we can reach the critical mass and as an effect, also as a consequence, also to have an affordable price in order to make these services accessible and affordable. So we will support very much the extension of the standardization mandates given by the Commission to the European Standardization Body in order to have important developments into the field. And the last point I would like to make is regarding the importance of e-skills. We really need to be more focused on e-skills. And I would like to let you know that recently the European Commission came with a proposal for a decision on broadband. And we will try also to include there some provisions on barrier-free digital television, because I do believe it is not enough just to have this spectrum released, but also to be ready with the appropriate services which could reach the critical mass. Once again, thank you very much for being here, and I hope this is just the beginning of our cooperation into this field and to have many other debates on this issue. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this. Something to add, Mr. Cosa?
Just a few words. I would like to add my own thanks to the organizers as well of this conference, and also thanks to the interpreters for their hard work, and the technical team who have worked so very hard to make sure that all this was made possible, and for me to have access to this conference via the interpreters. I'd like to add a few words also, and just to say how thrilled I am to see how that technology can just change the quality of our lives. Now, us both MEPs are working really hard to put pressure on a political level for things to change, and how we can use the new technologies to transform the quality of our lives, our real lives. And we are raising a strong alarm in the European community. The European lives of 500 million people growing older, aging now, we need to really be innovative, imaginative, to make sure that the technology does improve our lives in the future. And now we are rolling up our sleeves and are working really hard towards announcing new legislative framework so that this can happen. Thank you all for coming, and see you another time. Thank you all.
Well, thank you very much. And just to conclude, from the side of the Commission, thank you very much to all for coming, especially to Mrs. Ticao, Mr. Cosa, for their personal commitment and the commitment of the European Parliament that they represent here today. Thanks to the European Parliament and for this to our project for hosting us today, and to all those that came here presenting all this good work. It was really interesting, and work continues, as we have just heard, which is very, very encouraging. So just a word on logistics, because after all this information, we also need some food, and there will be some lunch outside served, I think, and there will be the opportunity to see more demonstrations also in the minutes to come, I think, outside. So with that, thank you very much to you all.
Just closing it.